Good morning, honorable members, honorable deputy minister, DG, chairperson of the board, treasurer and speaker, the CEOs, you are all welcome in this meeting. Members of the public are here, and the media. We have called this meeting to look at the performance of the department and its entities. And yesterday we dealt with the performance of the department, and today we are dealing with the performance of the entities, which is FIFA and FIFA. The Chairman is not here. I'm not dealing with the apologies. The reason is that the chairperson of the board has lost her husband. And also as a result of that, the deputy minister and her team would requested that they be excused when we break for lunch so that they can go and be part of the preparations for the funeral. The CEO of Southern Hospital. So we have deferred, I have deferred their presentation. I would now take other apologies, but if there are any, as the
good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. The apology of the minister, who is abroad on official work, and in just from our side the former acting DG, Lindell, his non-acting DG, Bigosik.
Thank you very much. Honorable Sean.
Yeah, I just wanted to record Honorable Kruger's absence. He may have already told the Secretary yesterday that he has constituency work he has to attend to.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members, GM, the chairperson of the board, CEO. I would like to extend the apology, receive the apology of Mr. Honorable Mlaudzi. He is attending the other committee as he is chairing committees. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We now invite FIFA to make its presentation.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, the DG of the Department, colleagues. We thank you very much for making the time for us to come and make a presentation of the annual report of FIFA for the year 2014-2015. We continued to consolidate the work of FIFA, this being the third year of FIFA's existence. The growth of the organization continued from the previous year with a number of achievements. The number of small businesses and cooperatives that were reached in terms of the services that we provide, which is loans, grew by 48% from the previous year. And the money that was invested in the economy in terms of disbursements to small businesses also grew to the tune of about more than 40%. And so, Chair, we come to report that indeed FIFA is continuing to grow, and we are reaching more small businesses. However, we don't underestimate the extent of the need for services out there, the number of small businesses that still require our services that we have not been able to reach so far. Even with those achievements, Chair, we did experience some challenges for the year. We are not satisfied with our level of impairment. I think that the rapid growth, as much as we know we have to reach more small businesses, we do have to balance that with the sustainability of the organization. The impairments, although below budget and lower than market norm, but we still believe that we have to control the impairments that have grown from the previous year. The turnaround times have improved. I think that they have improved, but I think that there's still a number of small businesses who are experiencing long turnaround times within FIFA. Although we have improved, but we still need to work very hard on that. We have not reached as many small businesses who with disabilities. We had talked about this, Chair, at the beginning when we came to present our corporate plan. We have not achieved what we had set ourselves to achieve, but we have put in place a strategy when we come to share our corporate plan again early in the year. Next year, we will share with the committee what the strategy around that entails. But it's mainly about having a very active focus in making sure that we market to the people when visit the people who with disabilities. We are growing to our network so that people in rural areas can get our service closer to where they are. In the year that we are reporting, we have improved on that, but we have not reached what we believe small businesses require and have got plans again to extend that work. One of the challenges that we had in the previous year, Chair, was the cost of finance to the small businesses, especially for the micro and the survivalist. So we are still working on that, as it entails making sure that the service to these small businesses is not interrupted. And so we are working with our partners to find a middle road, because they themselves are closer to the small businesses, and therefore they operate with limited infrastructure, and the cost of delivering that service is high. So we continue to work with them, Chair. We have improved our work with the cooperatives. We have done better in working with cooperative finance institutions. However, this is one of the areas that we have targeted for this financial year. Chair, this was a year when we were still working with the Minister Patel. At the beginning of this year, we moved to working with Minister Zulu, and we have already aligned our programs to the strategic objectives of the Department of Small Businesses, and we are excited with the integrated manner in which we deal with small business issues and support that we receive from the Department and the Ministry so far. This is just an introduction, Chair. My CEO will do a detailed presentation. But before we do that, we ask the CEO, Chair, if you could allow us, we have a video that we have prepared, just to give you a feel of some of the small businesses that we actually support. And this is a 6-minute video, so it won't be long. Thank you.
am Belen Holman from Pittsburgh, owner and founder of Reclaiming Youth Management. I started my business in 2010. There was a youth gap that I saw in the industry because I would always see waste lying around in the streets. So I thought of a solution on how to solve the problem that parents, I know that coming up with a solution for that problem could actually be a business to me. So that's very old fashioned. So I had a whole keeper. I drafted the business plan and went to them and then I told them and asked them to give me a backing. Because we needed to work with, start working with other products as we're only working with club only products. So my application was successful and then I started collecting other ways. I started collecting first we create direct and indirect employment in our community because we have ways speakers that sell away, that come in bringing their ways to sell it for us. They're about plus 920 families that leave from selling the waste for us.
I call myself an entrepreneur. I find myself feeling an industry whereby skin manufacturer, Mashala, which is an industry whereby you will not find a lot of winning. When we started, we thought of approaching the DTI because DTI is a part-time. This strategy is for the business plan already from a very balanced with business to business savings from a general loan. But one loan they have more commitment because that's in a whole manner before also. That's when we decided for, okay, after approach with FIFA, whatever they can give us, they granted us a loan. And we have the intention in the community because it's fixed up in 2014. Whatever happens in the next 4 years, everything is going to happen to the government in 2015. The loan was 348, of which it was split between two for machinery and factory setup. The cooperative in another 10 members, of which 9 are female and 1 is gentleman.
I joined Independent Foundry, where I started learning about the foundry work, and then I started foundry with a partner, and then finished doing workouts, so I decided to open Dula Foundry. So I went to NetBank, and NetBank wanted extra security. So since well I had, you know, a small house in the location, you know, in Solerville, the bank didn't want to actually utilize that for security purposes. So the bank then advised me to approach FIFA so that we can get extra security. So FIFA was very much accommodating, and I was, you know, given extra security by FIFA, and all the requirements were sorted and were met. The loan that we were looking for was about 3 million. But because, you know, it was a startup business, it was a high risk business, the loan was then reduced to about 1.2 million, of which it was divided into different categories, the term loan, you know, and the capital investment, and also the overdraft. But in total, the loan amount was 1.2 million. We also want to try to create jobs. At the moment, we have employed about 34 people that are on our payroll.
I've been working for Pacaman Foundation since 2008, December. But the company started in 2007. The company was started by Mark and Shirley Taka. Somebody gave him a book which talked about poverty, and that is when the idea came in that he could start actually something that would help especially the marginalized, the poor of the community, especially women who are not working. With the kind of business with the development microfinance, especially that focuses on the poor of the community, get people who believe in that idea and who can come on board and support it is sometimes very, very challenging. We got both the loan, we also got grants from FIFA, which has helped us expand our program. After opening about 5 to 6 branches in Kumalanga, when we then got the support from FIFA, we managed to spread our wings to provinces such as Limpopo. So we would say we have managed to go that far as a result of the support that we have received from organizations such as FIFA.
I'm the managing director and founder of the Kali Underground Contractors. I've always been passionate about the mining industry since I come from the Pacific area. and I started researching the industry because we just come up and own it. So that's when I went to the drawing board and said, you know what, let me get other aspects for the mining industry. That's when I got into mine contracting. You go underground, you go with your team, you check the practices out here, you liaise with the local engineers, and you know, we do our short grid application where we spray concrete mixed with chemicals on the wall after they do the drill and glass. That's where we come in with our team. After the, you know, the strikes in Rothenburg, where we saw many companies like myself, many contractors, you know, going to the brink because there were no contracts for us, there were no invoices, you know, many companies were really going to the ground. And that's where I went to CIFA. At CIFA, I have employees at the company, and I cannot let my company fail. So please help me with funding for working capital and also to buy equipment, so that I can, you know, market myself more. And CIFA really came on board for me. They helped me. I have no collateral, but they still helped me. It's a good funding institution by the government. So they helped me to the tune of 1.7 to 1.8 million.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'll give over to the Chief Executive Officer to present the details. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, for the opportunity to share with you what we have done during the 2014-15 financial year. Just to highlight in terms of our funding activities that the Chairperson of the Board highlighted, in terms of our approvals, we have approved R1 billion to SMEs and cooperatives during the year under review. The money that we have put to the economy in terms of the disbursements, we have disbursed R1.3 billion. The difference between the some of the disbursements relates to the approvals that we had in the previous financial year. And then as a result of funding activities, we have assisted over 68,000 SMEs and cooperatives. And we believe that as a result of that, we'll be able to assist in the facilitation of over 60,000 jobs. 74% of our disbursements going to business are owner managed by black people, and then 50% of our disbursements go to the priority provinces. I will be able to highlight it as we go down through the presentation. With regard to the businesses that are owner managed by women, we have disbursed $484 million during the year under review, which is more than 50% in terms of our funding activities. Young people, we have disbursed 86% of our funding to businesses in terms of the increase of businesses that have gone to businesses that are owner managed by young people. I'll share with you the specifics regarding the quantum of money that has gone to young people. In terms of just give you the overview of our activities, where we are a three-year-old, just over a three-year-old institution, a state-owned company, we report in terms of our authority to the Department of Small Business Development. 100% in terms of holding and funding from the IDC, and our major funding sources come from government as well as the IDC. Our mandate is to really to be the catalyst, leading catalyst in the development of sustainable SMEs and corporate flow provision of finance. The values that we aspire is speed and agility. The chair of the board indicates that there are still challenges with regards to improving our turnaround times. But this is what we aspire to do, the speed and agency, the passion for development, integrity, transparency, and continue to identify innovative products. CIFA at the end of the financial year, we had 209 employees. We are currently sitting about 222. With regard to governance as an institution, we follow the normal company policies and procedures and comply with the regulations, including the PFMA, the Companies Act, among others. For the past 3 years, we have seen yesterday the report done by the Auditor General. We have received unqualified audit opinions since establishment, with no findings. With regard to the issue of performance against targets, 70% of our key performance indicators have been achieved, which translates to 16 out of 23 during the year under review. Just briefly, in terms of our group structure, CIFA has got subsidiaries, associates, and joint ventures. Some of the subsidiaries include a Kula Credit Guarantee, by just for example, which is an insurance indemnity company where we provide, we indemnify national banks and non-banks for funding that we provide to SMMEs and the cooperatives. Just won't go into detail in the presentation. With regards to our associates, you remember the business partners in the olden days, SBDC. When SBDC in past, we CIFA managed to through Kula received 22% shareholding by virtue of us owning the properties, the township industrial parks, as well as the tel parks, which then translates as owning 22% in the business of the business partners. So we account it as an associate in our books. We also have from the joint venture, just to highlight, we have a collaboration with the Anglo-American Zimelen, with a fund called Anglo-Kula Mining Fund, where Anglo-American contribute 100 million and we have contributed 100 million as well to assist those that are participating in the mining sector. We have also collaborated with partners as well as Anglo-Zimel, where we form a company called Stytok Pty Ltd, trading as Hodisa Supplier Development Fund, which assists those that are in the supplier development space, largely with funding, amongst others. The last one you see on the slide is the SIFA Awaju Youth Fund, where we collaborated with Awaju to be able to identify opportunities for young people who are venturing into a business. With regard to our model, we provide largely the loan funding. Our channels are direct lending channel as well as the wholesale lending channel. Direct lending provides products such as the finance, plant, equipment. If SMEs and corporates want to acquire plant equipment, we'll then be able to assist them. Most of our funding goes to the bridging loans, those that might have received contracts, for example, either public or private sector, asking us to be bridged financially, we'll then be able to assist them, as well as the term loan which amortized over a period of 5 years. We have got the wholesale lending activities where we utilize our partners, such as the microfinance intermediaries, cooperative financial institutions and commercial banks, and other strategic partners to identify opportunities. I did mention already about the credit indemnity for our Kula Credit Guarantee, where we indemnify commercial banks, for example. We also provide all these wholesale lending facilities, the revolving loans, structured finance solutions, what we have internally now, where we identify opportunities with various partners. And with our team within the wholesale, then we'll be able to structure a facility tailor-made on a project-by-project basis. And we also provide term loans to our partners, intermediaries. And we also provide, as part of our mandate, currently non-financial support through CIFA, where we provide the post-loan mentoring for the clients that have been funded by CIFA. Where we make sure that the clients that we have funded, they are able to pay back. Where we have a holding, also have a board presentation in some of these companies to ensure and instill that the covenants prevail in the companies that we have got investment in. And we also, in collaboration with partners, CEDA in particular, provide management and the technical support, as well as the properties that we have at an indicated area in various provinces. Our funding range from 50,000 to 5 million through our direct lending and the wholesale, particularly the micro enterprises who are looking for funding of anything from 500 rand, we then provide it through our partners. In terms of the distribution channel, we have got offices throughout the country in all provinces. The main offices, about 10 of them in all the provinces, we also collaborate with other institutions, CEDA and IDC, and we also have we provide funding to SMEs and cooperatives through our partners, as indicated earlier. And then in terms of our target market, we are saying our businesses have to be targeting those that are owned by black people. 70% of our funding, year in, year out, has to be best in terms of our balance forecast to businesses that are owned by black people. 45% of activities have to go to women-owned businesses. 30% is our target to set for businesses that are owned by young people. And we've got 2% currently for people living with disabilities. And another 45% for those that are in the rural communities and townships. In terms of the sectors of the economy, we follow the government priorities, We provide the funding across all sectors, that in services, those that want to render into tourism, for example, that are in retail, for example, the franchising type of businesses, that are in wholesale space, we need to be able to assist them. We also participate in manufacturing, particularly agro-processing. It's one of our sectors that we are targeting. We also in agriculture, where in this case, for the past 10 years, we have been managing the fund on behalf of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. We partner on global sellers, where we assist those that are in the agricultural space to buy, for example, the machination, plant and equipment, or they are looking for working capital and contract financing activities. We are overweight in the construction space, where we provide funding for those that are participating in construction, small-scale construction contractors that are looking for funding and will be able to assist them. We are also in the mining space, small-scale type of mining, and we also participate in the green industries. Renewable energy, as you see in the video, one of our beneficiaries, waste and recycling management. These are the sectors that we participate in. And just to highlight our funding activities since the establishment of CIFA, as you know, the 2011-2012, there was cooler and summer. In terms of approval, you can see the trajectory with regard to the improvement in terms of the activities of the new CIFA since the merger in 2012, moving from 440 million of approval to over a billion for the past 2 years. And we believe that CIFA has indeed significantly increased our funding activities in the economy. I remember down memory lane when we came to the portfolio committee three years ago, when the committee said we need to be able to seek quantum leap in terms of the CIFA activities. While we are reaching now, the time we were coming at 800 million, and now when we see that we are in billion of rands, we believe that no more can still be done in terms of our steps going forward to make sure that we address the challenges that the country is facing of unemployment, inequality and poverty, contribute in some way. We know that 2014, 2015, and even currently the market condition has not been conducive, but we try to really maintain our funding approval. Ordinarily, the DFI, the Development Finance Institution, they are then able to provide help in the market in times of difficulties. And we believe that we are well placed in this space to be able to really assist economies and cooperatives to be able to do more in the funding activities. You have to look in terms of our channel of activities. The direct lending is our flagship, where we do directly through our branch network. The 50% of our activities in terms of value of approval are in the direct lending space. We provide funding directly. We need to be able to increase this significantly as our flagship as we move forward. Wholesale funding, we have done 24%. The land reform, 18%, and the banks, the collaboration that we have with banks through our collective guarantee, 6%. We are mindful of the fact that there's a lot that we need to do in the space of cooperatives. The wholesale loan to cooperatives represents about 3% of our approval. We believe that there's more room for improvement in this space because we only, for the year under review, approve 40 million, which is a significant quantum leap from the previous year, but it's still not enough. We need to be able to do more in this area. With regard to the sectors, I did indicate earlier that we are overweight in the construction space, where construction takes a chunk of our funding activities, followed by manufacturing and retail. However, we try to invest in the productive sectors of the economy, as defined by government policies. And the direct lending portfolio is still dominated by construction, as I indicated, mainly relating to the local housing funding activities that we provide from time to time. With regard to the measurement of disbursements for the past 2 years, we have made it possible for 822 million funding in 2013-2014 to go to SMEs and cooperatives by disbursements. This year we've just done under 1.3 billion rand. In terms of the flow to the economy, and the disbursement to SMEs corporate increased by 58% year on year. This slide is very, very important, Robert Jefferson, because it highlights in terms of our activities that we have done in the provinces. I've said that we need to make sure that at least 45% of our activities year on year have to go to priority rural provinces. And now there are a number of areas that we have identified that we need to be able to do more. And the lion's share is taken by the big metros. If you see the Gauteng with about just under half a billion in terms of funding that is best. KwaZulu-Natal, Ampiza Metis Limpopo, a significant impact in terms of our funding that has been dispersed. There's room for improvement in the province of the Northern Cape as well as the Northwest in terms of activities. We identified this, that this is an area that we need to have concerted effort as we move forward. With regards to the impact of jobs as indicated on the highlighted slide, we believe that we have assisted over 60,000 jobs in terms of facilitation with regard to the support to SMEs and cooperatives, the 68,000 in terms of 60,000, over 60,000 SMEs and cooperatives that have been assisted, which is an increase of 48% from the previous year. Just the quantum with regard to the specific on the youth, in October 2018, we have launched a fund in collaboration with the IDC and the NYDA, where IDC contributes a billion rand, and Sipho said 1.7 billion rand will be allocated to businesses that are owned, managed by young people. So since the launch of that fund, we have put over 450 million funding to businesses that are owned and managed by young people. For the currently under review, 292 million went to businesses that are owned by young people. Women, 484 million has been dispersed to businesses that are owned by women. Rural provinces or rural based, 636 million and back owned 954. The numbers will not necessarily add because where there is a youth, that youth might happen to be a woman, that woman might happen to be sitting in the, residing in the rural province, and it can happen to be black in terms of the numbers of percentages that I also highlighted earlier. But we have identified that there is definitely a need for us to really provide concerted efforts in businesses that are owned by people living with disabilities, as well as the women and youth in terms of our activities going forward. Just to provide highlights in terms of the activities and cooperatives, as the chair of the board has indicated, we have assisted in terms of about 653 enterprises, which were funded through our cooperative financial institutions. We have dispersed to this cooperative financial institution during the year under review 5.7 million, and then the funding that we've done to the cooperative enterprises for the year, we have approved 40 million rands. In terms of going forward, we identify five new strategic partnerships where we need to be able to improve and target businesses that are cooperatives in nature. And then we have also identified the need to come up with new products, develop products focusing on agricultural value chain in particular, retail, waste management, and construction. We'll continue to partner with those that are participating in the phase of cooperatives. For example, the CBDA, we have partnered with CBDA in the development of a bank platform that is going to be able to benefit the cooperative landscape. Just to share with you some of the partnerships that you have seen on video, you have seen the Cheetah Wheel. I think that was our second video. Where we assisted, we partnered here with AFGRI in terms of assisting those that are in the space of cooperatives who manufacture coal and breakers, which has provided a total facility of 11.6 million. And GROK has contributed to 2.4 million in this regard. And we have identified the need to assist 24 cooperatives throughout the country. Today, we have already assisted in two provinces. We have also partnered with Working 25, which is a community-based development business model that seeks to assist entrepreneurs who are disadvantaged in township and rural areas. This is in the food, the retail store, operating as a franchise model and sells groceries and type of meat, etc. And the model then helps the shop owners and the enterprises to really benefit in the buying space. And we have put in 10.4 million rand loan in this space, which we believe that 82 cooperative enterprises will then be assisted. We then participate in what we call the Rise Up Bakeries, where through the Employment Creation Fund, a funding of 50.9 million rand has been approved to support the creation and development of a complete mobile bakery solution in Western Cape. And at least the 50 mobile bakery units will be established that will produce about an average 320 loaves of bread per bakery. And we are an implementing agent in this regard from a partnership perspective. We have also, throughout the Department of Education School Feeding Scheme, we have set aside the 30 million facility to enable the cooperatives and micro-enterprise to participate in government's National School Nutrition Program with the overall purpose of enhancing access to education by providing daily nutritional meals to our junior citizens at schools. We have also partnered with the Southern Enterprise Propeller. This partnership is basically a privatized partnership with the Housing Enterprise Propeller together with the City of Tshwane, where we identified young people that are given contracts by the City of Tshwane, and the City of Tshwane insists on the health form cooperatives. Some of them, you see them that along the highways that are cutting grasses. We then assist them in terms of buying plant equipment, the cars that are utilized in this space. So we have put together the 30 million facilities for those that have been awarded the contract for the City of Tshwane for Youth Program. And we believe that this will go a long way in assisting young people in the cooperative landscape. We have also collaborated with the Eastern Cape Development Corporation, ECDC, together with the Provincial Department of Economic Development and Environmental Affairs and Tourism, DGIT in the province, where we identify opportunities that are going to arise through the Wild Coast Corridor. SMEs and cooperatives that are thriving in the area, they can be able to benefit and access the funding. And the fund will then focus and support those SMEs in the region. And then contractors must be getting the sessions or contracts will be secure in this place. So we believe that this is one of the areas where through partnership we can be able to do more. And then we also have what we call the gold loan scheme, where the primary objective is to stimulate growth and create job opportunities and facilitate access of new entrants within the jewelry. Because we believe that the beneficiation of our own products in the country is fundamental and is aligned with the government priorities, and in CIPA then participate in this space where we put aside 20 million facilities for this program in collaboration with the IDC. We have also collaborated with the DBSA with regard to what we call the Green Fund, and what the purpose of the fund is really to lay the basis for the economy to make a transition from low carbon, resource efficient and climate resilient development path, where the impact we believe will be crucial. A 30 million facility from CIPA side, we believe that we are able to go a long way. We collaborate also with the private sector. In this case, we put what we call the structured finance solution, which I indicated as one of the products that internally, when we identify opportunities with partners, we engage with them. We then say, how can we be able to tailor-make this funding activity for SMEs and cooperatives? In this case, we have partnered with the BHP Billiton and Hulamin, where we identify those that are in the aluminium beneficiation space in this country. We have set aside 100 million for these opportunities, and so that we can be able to encourage those that are for funding up to individual up to 5 million on the 100 million facility that we collaborated to ensure that the fabrication of aluminium steadily grows in this country. We have during the year also partnered with Prata. The facility of 100 million was approved, tailor-made for women-owned enterprises who believe that will be able to participate in the rally program. To mention, I won't go into detail in this in the presentation, but I just want to re-emphasize the last one where we're sharing with the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, where we are saying 50 million facilities set aside for those that are participating in the tourism sector, where the partnership that we have would help us really to identify and from the technical perspective to assist us really to de-risk most of the risk in the space. And then and other activities. I'm running the interest of time, won't go into detail in some of these activities. But the macro enterprises, as you can see, we have partnered with the like of, I think what we've mentioned, International Labour Organization, because we believe by partnering with them, they will then be able to help in terms of what you call the start and improve your business. They provide the fiscal training, ethnics and cooperatives. And from our side, we said 10.3 million rand will be available in this space. And then ILO will then provide the technical aspect of the think it will also be important that we also partnered with the fruit produce market and the pilot project that we are working, Deben and Mangaung, where we can develop 5 million that have been identified. I mentioned about for this, I won't go through this, this is a supply development fund at the Anglo American, as I was giving the highlights there in our group structure. I did mention what we do on the Codisa as well as Anglo SIFA mining fund. I would not really go into detail in some of the case studies because some of them you have seen them in the video. I would not really do a very, very quick scan into them. LN Manufacturing, which is based in the Port Elizabeth, received a 5 million rand facility in from our institution, where we believe that they're going to be able to really add value in the manufacturing space, and then a number of jobs get created. I think what we make us excited is about 6 black women engineers that are really partaking in this business venture. You have seen this one on the video, Mashele has got funding from our institution. We also assisted Namadox, which is based in Brest, with 4.5 million for direct lending. This company is based in what we call the mining of granite. You know, granite is used for a number of things, for kitchen and other activities. And we believe that this will be able to will create 40 jobs as a result of our funding. We have also assisted in the farming space in the also in Gauteng, where 3.2 million facilities have been provided to this young young entrepreneur, who then applied the bids to we all know grant bids under contract to other entities, but so doing is helping to really assist in the job creation, and we believe that this is the developmental impact activities that we've done. Sinmon Trading is a company that received 4.7 million direct lending. It's a black-owned company that participates in construction. And then they approach us and provide us with the funding, and then 50 jobs are created as a result. We also in the baking space to really assist those that are participating in the bakery. The black youth-owned company received a modest 107,000 funding from FIBA. So then assist this company to do their home bake, they do cakes, they do a number of things. And here is a partnership with our sister agency, FIBA, which assisted in terms of the branding, assist the company with the branding activities. They afforded them the opportunity to really attend the various courses on the terms of hygiene, provision, and food security. And then NYDA, the sister agency, is also providing this young entrepreneur with the bookkeeping service. And then assist with the monthly producing of for management account registration and other compliance related activities. Bovana Trading, which is based in Kimberley, received over 800,000 from an institution. It's 100% owned by youth. The exciting thing about this, they are participating in the healthcare space. They provide what's called the diagnostic radiology to check in terms of various diseases, etc. And then 3 jobs are created, including the owner of business. SIFA then also assist in terms of mentorship to ensure that this business really becomes sustainable in the foreseeable for a longer period of time. In Limpopo, Drop Kaman, I won't go through this, you've seen it on the video. We have also assisted in Kalisha here in the Western Cape, a black woman-owned enterprise, which is participating in a number of activities. They do renovation, building, they do the cleaning, the fencing, the plumbing, you name them. They receive 484,000 rands from SIFA through our direct lending for them to be able to really execute the contracts that they receive from government. And the company is growing, it's now bidding for other bigger contracts. Dua Foundry was on the video. We also assisted in terms of our partnership with Nextil, private sector, where there is what you call the supplier credit facility, where we provide opportunities for SMEs and operators to be able to go and buy the products at a competitive price in terms of them not necessarily if for a period of 30 days, for example, they don't default, they don't have to pay any significant interest. So in this case, they need to call HV and LV, Electrical Construction. They are partnered through our credit facilities. They managed to be able to pay the supply of 250,000 rand with the Maxville. We have put together in this case a facility with a pilot of 10 million rand so that enterprises can be able to get this this type of support. This is the program that this partnership, we believe that the input of goods will be provided to supply of credit line to SMEs and cooperatives. And as I said, if they default, then we'll be able to indemnify. This is typically through our Kula Credit Guarantee company. Most of the challenges have been highlighted by the chairperson. I won't really repeat them. I'll also maybe just mention those that the chair might not have highlighted. The one relating to the issue of sales. And I remember when we were at the committee last time, the committee asked us what is it that we want the committee to help us with. When we provide funding to SMEs and cooperatives who receive contracts from government, we need them to be able to pay back. So by having sessions, it helps that when they executed the contract, they had paid, money comes to CFRS, and then thereafter, we then be able to give them the money. So I'm engaged with various spheres of government. There are instances where we are, in most cases, we are not able to get the session. And as a result, this leaves us in a situation where for the ability of default because the payment has come. So this is really one of the crucial areas for us, because particularly now when going forward, we anticipate we have a number of funding activities for 80% set aside by government. So we'll need to be guaranteed that yes, when an intervener that we assisted, when they get paid, the money flows. That is crucial, one area that we'll look at. The CIFA accessibility is one of the areas we identified for how to be able to really do more in various areas. We need to be able to create more access points so that SMEs and corporations can be able to really access funding. And we identified that co-location is very, very crucial, because for us to be able to roll out offices throughout various provinces, it will be a bit, it will be very expensive. But if we co-locate with the sister agencies, EDA, IDC, the local municipalities, the LED offices, the post office, this will be able to help us going forward to really provide the access of to funding. The people living with disability is one of the challenges we have identified. We have identified the need to really collaborate with associations that are manned and then that are dealing with people with disabilities. We don't have to wait for them to come to offices. We need to be able to go out there and identify. Cooperatives, as is mentioned, is one of the areas we really need to be able to do more as we move forward. We identified the low-hanging fruits in terms of our activities in that area of business. We need to be able to do more. Credit indemnity, I mean, the uptake has been sluggish over the years. We are reviving this product because we believe it's very, very important to increase the access to finance to SMEs and cooperatives. We also identify the need, being over a three-year-old entity, to continuously capacitate our staff internally, provide various training, benchmarking with other institutions to come up with an innovative solution to assist SMEs and cooperatives. The CIFA property portfolio is one of the areas we have identified. They need to really improve that. There are a number of initiatives that are already underway now to make sure that the properties that we have, the industrial park, are at a conducive, conducive state for those operating entrepreneurs in those properties, for them to be able to really do their business activities. It's underway in this space, and believe that when we come next time, we'll be able to report fundamental what really improvements that we're putting in this space. As the chair of the board indicating, for us is a balancing act. We need to make sure that we fund, we have a high appetite for risk, but at the same time, as an institution, we need to be able to be sustainable to make sure that as we fund, we collect, and then when we collect, we'll be able to fund other SMEs and cooperatives. The way forward just before our CFO leading us through the science, I just want to highlight. We continuously want to grow our book. We want to grow our book significantly. But at the same time, we need to do that by enhancing our capacity internally, strengthening our human resources capabilities. We need to be able to continue to market the Siva brand through press media for us. Everybody who's seeing whatever in rural and very urban know that this agency of government has good facilities that they can be able to access for them to be able to do their business, also doing their realizing their dreams. And we need to be able to consolidate and ensure that our post-investment monitoring, the management of the loan book that we have funded, is continuously monitored through our intervention that we put in place, and the collection of the funding that we have put businesses so that we can be able to do more activities. As I conclude for this part, we really, as I said, continue to grow the loan book in summary. We identify innovative products. We continue to take input from the Tuolo Committee, from the Department of Small Business Development, from our other stakeholders, the board, so that we are coming up with a new way of doing things, identifying the product that can be able to really scale up our funding activities to the targeted clients. And then we'll continue to really play a counter-cyclical role in the economy and positively intervening to develop SMEs and cooperatives through a partnership. SIFA will continue really to be to play a radical and inclusive finesse in terms of transformation in the economy. And then we believe that strongly we cannot be able to do this alone. Partnership is key, both private and public sector. And we'll continue to really identify the partnerships that we can be able to really unlock opportunities for SMEs and cooperatives. Honorable Chair, members, if I can just pause here, briefly just want to give my CFO,
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The growth in interest between 2014 and 2015 has been 104. This is mainly due to the last disbursements that have been increased in the last financial year of 1 billion rand. Our impairment charge remains high at 22% and as a percentage of our total loans, and as our CEO has mentioned earlier on, that remains a challenge for SIFA, but we are having processes to manage that. Cost to income ratio is also high at 1.22%, which means that for every rand that we make, we actually spend 1 rand to 22 cents. Our assets are sitting now at 2.4 billion rand. Again, this is obviously in relation to the total loans approval and also the total loans that we are disbursing. Again, we've mentioned impairments being a challenge. We are sitting at 33% of our loans being non-performing loans in our active portfolio. The loans have been growing a lot. We've discussed that again with the fact that we have 1 billion rand investment that has been done in the current year, with our loans growing by 86% in the last financial year. Our debt-to-equity ratio has actually improved a lot from 140% in the previous year to 42%, but this has also been mainly due to the conversion of the shareholders' loan, which was converted into equity with our shareholder, the IDC, in the previous financial year. Our operating costs have actually declined in the last financial year. If we use the real terms and inflation, if we take into account inflation, they have been constant on a rent-on-rent basis at 95 million in the last 3 years. But if you use real terms and if you take inflation into account, there has been a decline. Our cash and cash equivalents have declined from 776 million to to 534 million, and again, this is really in line with the disbursement that has taken place in the last financial year. Our loans and advances, we have discussed earlier on that they have grown by 36% from 479 million to 656 million. Investment properties have slightly declined in the last financial year, as we have been selling some of the investment properties that we have in our portfolio. Our investment has had just a slight increase from 794 to 860 million. Equity, I've mentioned this earlier on, it has increased from 950 million to 1.6 billion, and this really has been as a result of the shareholders' loan restructuring that in the previous year was sitting at a shareholders' loan, and it has now been reclassified to equity due to a loan agreement that has been converted in the last financial year. The shareholders' loan as a result has also decreased from 1.1 billion to 400 million. And our other liabilities have just increased slightly from 158 million to 300 million. There has been a restatement of comparatives. You will see that our comparatives have been restated. And this is as a result of IFRS 10, which placed in the last financial year, which really required that one of our subsidiaries, which is Kula Institutional Support, to be consolidated, and this was done in the current year. This is really our current composition. We will see that our cash and cash equivalents again still remains high, followed by our loans and advances and our investments also. If you go to our statement of comprehensive income, you will see that revenue has remained stable at the 200 million line. Our movements in impairments again remain a challenge, with impairments being very high. It has actually more than doubled in the last financial year from 90 million to 220 million. And our expenses have also increased from 221 to 300 million. Our interest received on loan remain our biggest contributor to our income, which is sitting at 34 million. This is really followed by our interest in cash and cash equivalents and the investment property rental income, and also the profit from our equity accounted investments. The interest received on loans and advances again grew by 64 million, which is a 27 year-on-year comparison, and this is really as a result of our increase in investment and approval rate. If you go to our expenses by category, you will see that personal expenses again is one of our big contributors to our expense lines, which is normal. Our other operating expenses have also remained stable, and again, movement on impairments and bad debts remain the highest contributor of our expenses. I'll just like to again just stress that the operating expenses rent on rent is at 94 million, but if you look at it in real terms, it has declined if you take inflation into account. That's it.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. That brings the presentation to the end. We will take questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We will then take questions and comments from members. Honorable November, followed by Honorable Chang, Honorable Mabasa, Honorable Mashwa, Honorable Mwabe, and then Honorable Kosa, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. Mine is just not a question, actually, sort of a clarity that I'm seeking for. It's all about when lending the money to the communities or to our people, is there any sort of, should I say, I know there are conditions that are stipulated, sort of a training or sort of just a short 5-minute course that is given to the people. Let me tell you why I'm saying this. Some of the people, when they see that I can get a million there, their eyes are just there at the million, not looking around that from this million, I have to buy some equipment, I have to do this, I have to do this, my income will be the same and all that thing. Just to understand the current question that I want to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Chief Executive Chair for the presentation. I think if one looks at CIFA as an institution, one can look at it from the perspective of shareholder, which is IDC. One can look at it from the perspective of the taxpayer, and one can look at it from the perspective of the country. And in all three instances, it looks like there's a downward turn in the sense that the financial results show deterioration of your position, in the sense that your impairments are going up and you've had to strengthen your balance sheet by converting a loan into equity. So this is a concern. I think we need to interrogate the reasons for the impairments going up and try and understand why that is happening and what we can do or what you can do to improve it. If you recall, at the financial workshop we had a few months ago, it was pointed out by the IDC that the DFIs contributed roughly 5% of GDP in this country, whereas in places like Germany it's 25%. And we're never going to get there if the financial performance of the DFI, such as CIFA, is continually being propped up and bailed out by the taxpayer, because it's just not sustainable. I know you understand that. I've had meetings with you where you have expressed this concern that, you know, you're not hiding it, but still the problem persists. You know, if you look at your cost-to-income ratio, again, I think we brought this up last time, your cost-to-income ratio of 122% compared to the commercial banking sector of roughly 30 to 60%. You know, no private sector bank could sustain a cost-to-income ratio of 120%. It's just not viable. Shareholders would actually just throw in the towel. So that's another issue, is how do you bring down your costs in relation to your income? There was a very interesting roundtable that I attended recently in Pretoria, convened by the National Advisory Council on Innovation, which is an agency of the Department of Science and Technology. And one of the presentations came from a lady, Claire Vazetti, who sits on the Innovation Council and is also a board member of CIVITISA, which is an advisory body or a lobby group for small and growing businesses. And the emphasis in her presentation, and I think she's been banging this drum for a long time, is that there's too much emphasis in DFIs in this country on input and process, not enough on output. Now, what are the sorts of outputs that we should be looking at? They are employment created, taxes paid by beneficiaries, sustainability of those beneficiaries over time. And I do honestly think that CIFA needs to give more attention to what is the actual impact on its beneficiaries. This requires longitudinal analysis of your loans. In other words, taking the beneficiaries over time and seeing how their businesses improve. It's not good enough just to have a look at the impact in one financial year. You know, as a DFI, we're not just interested in your internal dynamics and performance, we're interested in impact. So of those 60,000 businesses funded, what is the size of those businesses? Let's see a graph showing how many businesses employ how many people over time, so that we can actually see the long-term impact of your organization on the economy of South Africa. Another point that came up in this roundtable was the need in this country for what the industry calls a fund of funds. In other words, a fund that pools funds from multiple sources, government, enterprise supply and development, financial markets, international development agencies, and distributes this through specialist retail fund managers who have expertise in particular sectors of the economy. And I'd be interested to know whether FIFA has looked at this issue, has had discussions with providers of such funds, and whether it takes a view on its participation in such a fund. As you may be aware, the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry recently took a resolution to look at establishing a venture capital fund in this entry. I'd like to know if your organization has had any discussions along those lines. Another statistic that came up in the NECI round table was that in this country we sit in the top 5% of countries in terms of percentage of GDP accounted for by private equity, but in the lowest 5% in terms of GDP accounted for by venture capital. Now, what that tells us is that we're very good at investing in stable businesses that generate regular cash flows, but we're not very good at investing in businesses that are riskier and generate possibly higher cash flows, but are riskier. So that's the space in which you're operating. So, to what extent are you operating in a silo as CIFA, or are you looking at broadening the discussion around what the country needs to stimulate growth in high-value businesses? Another question is the Gazelle program, which is being run by CIFA. I would think that those businesses that are being adopted by CIFA are growth businesses in need of finance. So to what extent are you discussing the Gazelle program with CIFA, so that those businesses cannot just receive non-financial support, but also financial support? You talk a lot about partnerships, and I'd be interested to know what partnerships are you referring to that you wish to establish, with whom? And if these partnerships are under discussion, you may have things going on that you haven't told us about. If not, that'd be interesting to know. And then finally, what do you see as your greatest growth constraints? I mean, we've talked in past presentations about the need for scalability and replicability for CIFA to have impact. How are you going to grow your balance sheet from a billion to 5 billion? How long is it going to take you to get that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I want to start off with two general ills. When we received the input, Makia told me that we are receiving an input from a department that is serving that serves everybody else except the poorest of the poor, except the informal sellers, except that mother that sells bananas 5 acres baked by the sun for the whole day at the corner of every street, at the railway stations, at the taxi ranks. I heard nothing about them. So it would mean if the department is not serving those, we must know we are not serving the poorest of the poor. So I will need to be convinced that indeed you are serving the poorest of the poor. The second question is the partnerships that you enter into with various role players. We have a very well thought formula for getting into such partnerships, because it's well and good to get into a partnership, but if it is not well thought, you may find that we are taken for a ride as CIFA. I want to make an example. Nothing says it better than in Sotho words that says Mpempe yala bisha motho khona ke sa gagwe. I was not happy with the terms that it was the trade of industry then that related to work in 25. And when I asked them to convince me how work in 25 benefits township and rural economy, they couldn't convince me. The leadership of trade and industry couldn't. So I don't know whether you just accepted it as a package as is, or it is because it makes sense to you. Remember, I'm connecting it to the idiom that I said, that Mpempe yala bisha. Because you see, if we get to a township, one of the challenges that we must face and try to win is to empower black people in the township. It is not to bring white people to come and run businesses for the dairy corner there, the fish and chips of Namchi there. They will still bring white people, in addition to the malls, we still bring Working 25, which is owned by those three people. So if you can convince me that those three people that have engineered and are still running Working 25, is it because we don't want to trust black people to do these things for themselves? We have the youth. We have just been listening to our CFO here. We mean people of the equivalent of our young CFO. They can't they do what those three people from Working 25 are doing? Or is it because we are so used to giving big money to white people? You give a challenge. Then Africans poor, you know, when they are seated there with the, you know, you see poverty. You see, if we don't get out of that mindset, especially because we do have the likes of our CFO, it's not because we are not saying trust people that have never gone to school with funds, you know, to, because you see that the story of Working 25 is expertise of people that have gone to school. My challenge, what worries me is, are you saying we cannot have the likes of this young woman to substitute those people so that for a change the people in the township, in the rural area, can have confidence in themselves? They have been exploited. We shouldn't help intensify their further exploitation. And if you don't understand this theory, please do me a favor and say you don't understand Working 25. But if you do understand it, convince me. And that's what worries me about the partnerships that I hope when we get into them, we have given them a very good thought. And then when I go to page 5, yeah, page 5, actually it will be 4, I want to congratulate the department, actually CIFA, for having got the unqualified audit opinion. It is not an easy achievement, especially because you are saving, or maybe I should say you are supposed to be saving the poorest of the poor. It is not easy to deal with monies at that area and get good accounting, get accounting structures. It's not easy. So, congratulations for that unqualified performance. And can you just explain to me on page 7 the difference in the interest, or whether it is the same interest rate between the 50,000 to 5 million, and from 5 No, let me see. Oh, yeah, from 500. The one is from 50,000. The other one is from 500. Just whether the interest rates charged are the same or they do differ. And on number 11, if you could speak more about that 3%, the wholesale cooperatives. What does wholesale cooperatives mean relative to cooperatives? You know, and then if you can then expand on that percentage. And on 13, and it will not only be 13, if wherever it's possible, if you can do it, where you say disbursements to LMEs and cooperatives increased by 58%. That is, out of the 58%, what percentage goes to cooperatives? I'm impressed with the language articulated about SMEs and cooperatives. And cooperatives have come up very frequently today. That's great. But is that reflecting the interests that are going to cooperatives? Or is this, in other words, is the language proportional to what goes to cooperatives? Or we are going to get a disjunction? And remember, if we don't succeed with cooperatives, you are going to struggle to empower those people that I spoke of, the poorest of the poor, the informal business people, those people that never come to your business, because they would rather continue selling their five bananas rather than going to any business. In other words, related to that, do you have a strategy of mobilizing those poorest people? I don't know if I'm describing them properly, because when you do reply to me, I would be happy if I can get the right answer to the right question. I'm referring to, it says that Cape Town is, by the way, the city, so I don't quite see them here in Cape Town. But if you go to a township, I'm referring to those people that at a taxi rank. They are seated there, you know. It's mostly, most of the time, it's women. With a wooden table, if she's fortunate, with a wooden table, with what we call trop, something, you know, that way, that English word beats me. And then there's suffered the heat for so many times, you don't even know whether it was originally brown or red or what. It has a hole, so the rain does come through, but you know, she just imagines she still has a son and the woman. If you don't have successful cooperatives, and if you don't visit those people one by one, because it may feel like it's a waste to see her alone, understand her, engage her, find out how she stocks. How does she get her 5 boxes of tomatoes? Actually, it's never 5, it's usually 2. Those are cabbage. What does she do to send it before it becomes brown? You know, so if you don't engage them to a point where they appreciate you, you will just run in parallel with them. And no cooperatives means no service to the poorest of the poor. Northern Cape with 1%. It's not the first time we got a report that is it so difficult to go to Northern Cape? Is it so difficult? Does it mean there are no poor people in Northern Cape? Is that what it means? Or is it because it is too hot to drive there? It's not nice. Because remember, if we are going to serve these poorest of the poor, we must serve like them. We must be like them. Otherwise, we may as well forget about them. We are not going to make it. And I missed the meaning of CDGA. sorry for my ignorance, on 17. And on 16, I notice we have the categories, but we don't have the category of people with disabilities. So if you can't name it, you will forget it. So it's not there, if you could account for that. I'm about to finish, COVID chair. No. Let me end with a good talk. Congratulations, unqualified report. Keep up the good work. But please provide the answers. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have been informed that FIFA funding approval during the 2014-15 year compared to 2013-14 has declined. May we be reminded why the decline? Is it because people who were applying did not qualify? What's the reason? But secondly, also relating to working 25, the service model helps shop owners and enterprises to benefit from bulk buying. I want to know whether there are examples that they can give of enterprises that have benefited, as we know that many of the indigenous township entrepreneurs who own spaza shops have lost their spaza shops to foreign owners, and many of them is because they are not subsidized, and we are told that foreigners are buying in bulk. So is this Booking 25 helping our indigenous entrepreneurs? And if yes, can we be given examples of the help that has come forth? At least 50 mobile bakery units will be established. That's the future. Now, by when do you think this is going to be done to ensure that it's not a statement on paper? Regarding the need to co-locate with sister organizations, we know the benefit that will come out of this because our people many times are thrown from pillar to post because of offices that are so far apart, which is costly to go to all of them. So when is this co-locating going to happen? Is it something in the near future, and by when? If it's the near future, is it in this third year? When is it going to happen? Thank you.
Thank you. It was going to be honorable call.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to everyone in the house. Actually, I want to ask the question. I think my question has been covered by my colleagues. But I want to comment on two things. On your targeted groups, I must express that I'm very, very happy to see that among those groups that are targeted is people with disabilities and people in rural areas. We normally talk about those two groups in most cases, but on practical terms, we do not see it happening. I would love to see in your video the business of people with disabilities. We these days normally talk about the traditional economy and the likes, but we say less about the rural areas as well. I'm impressed that it's one of the areas that you've covered as targeted groups. Maybe lastly, on your strategy partnerships with some of the stakeholders, I've seen the Department of Education stated in your document, particularly the issue of school nutrition supporting cooperatives. To me, that is a challenge as well, because we normally say it's not good that kind of a work will be given to one individual, whereas the mothers of these kids in the area are unemployed. Yet they are expected to buy school uniforms for these kids and everything. But it is programs that should empower them financially, like even to certain individuals. In some cases, from maybe urban areas, they will have to drive to rural areas to look for these schools and good services. But what is impressive, if you have engaged in this particular exercise, to engage the Department of Education and fund these cooperatives, to me that is good. But I'm convinced it's happening practically. It's not something that is on paper. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Slightly covered in most of the questions, but I've got additions that I have to add on the target groups, because you would note the youth-owned, women-owned, then comes the rural-based. I just want to check on the rural-based and the rec-owned, that how is it clustered in the rural? Is it rec-owned catering for youth and the like, or is it separation in terms of that? Then in the school nutrition program, I just want to check here as to if we were really the cooperatives that are supplying this food to schools. So in which provinces is this happening, so that we can be in a position to go and encourage some of the provinces that are still lagging behind to go and copy the best content that is exercised by those provinces that really they are serious about giving cooperatives the supply of food to schools. Thank you.
Before I hand over to Frida to respond, I just want to add on some of the questions that have been asked. I want to add on a question that is asked by the comment that is made by Honorable Ngabe on people with disabilities, which also comes from Honorable Mabaso on slide 15. I want to link those two. Honorable Ngabe is saying, we appreciate the fact that you are reflecting people with disabilities as your target group. Honorable Mabasa is saying, on slide 16, where you are talking about the impact, you are then listing the groups where you have made an impact. And people with disabilities don't appear there. I just wanted to link those two. That I would want you to elaborate as to whether you have assisted businesses that are owned by people with disabilities, or you have identified them as your target group, you have not yet assisted them. And if you have, if you can then tell us where they are located and what kind of business do they run. On food nutrition program, you are talking about the fact that you have assisted cooperatives that are on school nutrition program. And there is an appreciation from both Honorable Mave and Honorable Khoza. But Honorable Khoza is taking questions for what to say. Can you also share with us the model, which would then talk to the value chain? Because for a very long time, funding has been given to cooperatives on their individual capacity without looking at the value chain. And I want to simplify my question. Before you feed in a school, you buy what you are going to use in order to feed the children in the school. And there are there is a specific menu from the Department of Basic Education, which talks about vegetables, it talks about soya, mint, as part of the menu. Then I came across that. I visited that with you. It's a food processing plant in rural areas. It processes soya meals and mix it with dried vegetables, which are carrot, cabbage, and mix that with rice to come up with a meal that can be supplied to the child. If one is still struggling to get a funding, but before you get to the processing plant of this Vuno, if you are funding a value chain, you would also fund those that are growing the soya beans, those that are growing the cabbage and the carrot, and you link them to Isivuno, because Isivuno is not going to process anything if those are not funded. Or if the supply from them does not meet the demand of the processing plant. And from Isivuno, you then also link Isivuno to those that are providing meals in the school. Now, but when you look at the income streams of the entire meal chain, you would then realize that those who are actually feeding in the schools are getting nothing, because they are called volunteer food handlers. And without analyzing that, you would not then impact on poverty, because those that are feeding in the schools are the ones that are closer to the school. And in the value chain, if you do not apply the cooperative development value chain, where you have a primary co-op, a secondary co-op, and a tertiary co-op, to actually group all of these using the solidarity principle of cooperatives, you still find that you are funding, but you are funding individual cooperatives that are not complementing each other to actually yield maximum benefits and reduce poverty around the school. So that is what I would want to add, particularly on this issue of the school nutrition program, because the school nutrition program is a set aside for cooperatives, meaning that the entire region, including Mutulu, must be a cooperative. You can now respond to questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and all the members. There are a number of questions. Some I will ask my colleagues to also assist in terms of their response. And then the one that we might not necessarily have information at hand, we can provide. The clarity seeking question from Honorable November about the are there any sort of cost providers to entrepreneurs when they are seeking or when they sought funding from activities. What we have identified as crucial is that by just giving funding alone without providing support, most of the entrepreneurs will not be able to see their second or third or second birthday. So internally what we have put together is what we call business support through both investment and monitoring. And in most cases now, when as part of the approval process, when we identify that the client require a mentorship earlier on, we then put as a condition that you are getting this funding from us, but we have identified shortcomings in certain areas. We need you to be provided with the support. So we'll then link you with this particular mentor to be able to assist. That is the one way we can be able to assist. So that is in place currently where we identify the needs. And then where we have identified that the client has given us the business plan is not watertight enough for funding, we'll then refer them to the sister agency to then be able to enhance the business plan. The questions from Honorable Chance and the comment thereof, I just want to highlight one aspect relating to the conversion of a shareholder's loan into equity. How the model used to work is that in the allocation of government, which is called a grant, come from government, through the medium-term expenditure framework, CIFA will be given a portion of a grant. But when the grant goes from CIFA, it comes to CIFA via the IDC. But if they come to IDC to CIFA as a shareholder's loan, and we have been deliberating with the shareholder in this regard, to an extent that we say that funding, it should not becoming as a shareholder's loan, but that it then be able to have an impact on our balance sheet. So the conversion of that MTF allocation on CIFA, we then agree that it has to then be converted into equity on our balance sheet. So I just want to maybe just highlight in terms of just clarifying in terms of the continuous provision of the funding by IDC and the government and the taxpayer. We take the point very critical because they're very, very important for us in terms of improving our financial position. The cost to income ratio is high. Mind of the fact we are DFR, but we still consider it is very, very high. We also need to make sure that as we approve more loans and disburse more, we'll then be able to improve our state of finance. The biggest challenge that we face is that our book has grown over the years. It has grown significantly. However, the collection aspect, aspect, which is a challenge that we have highlighted as one of the inhibitions in terms of our collection, it then affects the state of the of our financial position. So we have identified that yes, we need to be able to improve our collection. I just mentioned about the strengthening of our post-investment monitoring. We have introduced what we call the investment monitoring committee, which means on a monthly basis, where the team comprised chaired by the chief risk officer, they go through each individual loan one by one, just find out what are the challenges, what are the issues, even for the loans that have not been reached the state of declaration. And we then analyze what are the reasons for some of the clients that are not paying us. We collaborate with the clients that get funding from various agencies of government. We have collaborated with them in terms of writing them letters. What are the challenges? Typical example, some will have received funding from, I don't necessarily have to mention the partner with the government state-owned entity, and then they don't perform. Let's just say the ExCom, for example. wanted a contract from Eskom, but we were worried about why is this particular client not paying us. But the client then might not necessarily have service in terms of performance on the contract to Eskom. So we then say, for us, we need to be, as part of our fund process, we need to be able to engage with those partners that provide the contract. Not only looking at one way to receive the contract, execute, but those that have provided the contract to ensure how will this person who received the contract can be able to really perform on the contract, and then we'll be able to identify early warning signal. By that, will be able to help us to arrest the level of impairments that we have observed. By so doing, in terms of the question relating to the how do we bring the cost down? It's element of cost versus income, cost to income ratio. The more you do your collection, you receive more income, both in terms of interest and dividend, and then you'll be able to contain the cost. We have identified that part of our ongoing processes, our costs are contained. As you remember, the 94 million that the CFO highlighted in terms of trying to really contract, identify ways to save costs, but we are saying we also need to be able to collect and get more income to improve our financial position. There was a question relating to how many businesses that have been created and the number of jobs over a time graph. I think with that we might be able to, we won't necessarily have the information at hand at this stage. It's something that maybe as we continue to engage, we can do more analysis to see. These are the clients that have been funded by SIFA in year one. Now we're sitting in year three. How are they doing in terms of their revenue stream, in terms of their financial performance, etc. But the post-investment monitoring team, what they do is that they go and visit clients from time to time. Even clients that are performing, to see what are the challenges that the clients are doing. But in terms of the analysis of information that we receive, the management accounts, all the data aging analysis that we receive from the clients, as we analyze them over time, how has this client grown, has the beneficiary grown in terms of revenue. That is the information that we don't necessarily have at hand, but we can be able to provide. I take the input on the venture capital fund. We take the input as one of the areas that as a team will be able to look at as we progress further in terms of how can we then be able to come up with, as I indicated in my presentation, the innovative products, innovative solutions. How can we do business differently to really help us to scale up our funding activities. There was a question of the Gazelle program that CEDA is doing. We have been collaborating on the Gazelles as management with CEDA. We've been participating in a number of activities in the area, and then even CEDA and their partners have done the presentation to our management on the Gazelles. We see it as a pipeline for clients that really will be funded by CIFA, so we will participate in terms of the funding the Gazelles, who are still bringing the non-financial support. This is one of the areas that we really identify. And then, as I said, in terms of collaboration with partners, we really identify that we can't be able to do it alone. We can't work in silos. We need to be able to really identify growth potential, growth opportunities, where we can be able to really do our funding activities. The question was also raised by Honorable Chance relating to what is the greatest growth constraint on our institution. We still see ourselves as a relatively young organization that is 3 years old, where we need to really have the potential to do more, but we also make sure that the engine room is in place. If you look at the strategies that I've highlighted, one of the greatest areas is that we need to continuously improve our capabilities, our due diligence capabilities as an institution internally, so that at least we can have the necessary wherewithal to really venture into
more activities to grow up our loan book. So the really as a young organization growing, we need to be able to really identify these opportunities, improve our housekeeping in terms of skills internally, and then we can be able to look at that respect. If I miss any questions, I'll be able to come back into it. But if I move to the questions raised by
on the questions that you have covered, which you have responded to questions raised by Honorable November and Honorable Chan. The last question from Honorable Chan was, what do you see as your goal path? And how long will it take you to grow from 1 billion to 5 billion? That was the question. And the response that you are giving is a general response, where you are saying, yes, you say they need to grow, and you have to increase your loan book and repayment. But the question is very specific. Have you done your homework in terms of your growth path? And how do you envisage growing from 1 billion to 5 billion? That is the question.
Thank you very much, for clarity. When we came earlier in the year to present our 2015-2016 corporate plan, we have indicated that for the 2015-16, we anticipate to grow our book about 1.3 billion in terms of our funding disbursement activities, which are based on the allocation of funding, because the growth is the funding that you get allocated for a period, as well as the amount of collection. So for the next period of 3 years that we presented, we said we want to grow our book to about 5 billion rand over the next 3 years. And if we put it to an 8-year period, to the 5-year period, our detailed corporate plan look at the 8 billion rand activities in terms of where we want to grow our book in the area. We have identified that one of the critical areas for the growth of the book is the opportunities that are presented by government with regards to the 30% spare rights. And as I said, our contract financing is expected to grow significantly because we'll be able to assist but receive contracts from government. That's one area that we have identified. We have also looked at the need to provide finance on the cooperative space. Maybe I'm using this opportunity to also indicate that the cooperative enterprises themselves that we funded is 40 million for the year that is under review, which is low, but we are looking at a significant increase in the cooperative landscape in terms of our funding. I'm not necessarily having to figure at the moment, but I think we'll be able to pull it up as we progress. So that's one area that we've identified they need to grow. We also say the CULA credit guarantee program that we have that has been sluggish over the years. We are anticipating a modest growth in the activity, particularly now when we're looking at supplier credit activities. We are engaging with commercial banks and non-banks to start taking up our program in terms of the product of the guarantee activities. We receive from time to time quite a number of allocations. I think the
from various sectors of the economy that we need to be able to convert them into process transactions. So the number of transactions that we receive from time to time, taking into account in the past, building the internal capabilities so that we can be able to do more in terms of our scale of activities, that will then be able to help us to grow. We have identified and presented, when we presented to this committee previously, that we identified 87 access points, additional access points that we need to be able to really increase our activities. So as we go deeper into activities in various areas of our country, we'll then be able to really grow the fund.
Hello. So I would have expected you to think of the policies, the policy pronouncements that have been made by government. One of them is local procurement, which would have an impact in growing your loan book, because what you to be imported will be produced locally and be produced locally. Two is a policy pronouncement on 30% procurement from SMEs and cooperatives. That is a policy that could impact and enable you to grow in terms of giving loans, because there is a sustainable market. Both public and private. Because the private sector, like the retail sector that we have been engaging with, would be compelled to buy 30% of their, to spend 30% on SMEs and cooperatives, which is the client base. I would have expected you to look at those things as positive areas that are going to enable you to grow your loan book. But thirdly, the fact that there is the red tape, dealing with the red tape in the department, and also the work that is being done by the monitoring and evaluation to ensure that government departments and state-owned companies adhere to 30 days payment. Those are policies that would enhance your book. But then you also need to be specific to understand Guti. In terms of those policies, which then would be the market and which would be your target that you will be giving loans to? The pronouncement also by government that school nutrition program is for cooperatives, school furniture is for cooperatives, is then telling you that if you focus on those cooperatives, you will then grow your book. If the retail sector is saying on fresh produce, we are spending 77 billion rand a year, and then you take the 30% of that, which translates to 23 billion, and it is then for SMEs and cooperatives, then you will be focusing on saying we will fund more of fresh produce of agricultural cooperatives, because there is a sustainable market that is the retail sector, which has been brought here by the portfolio committee, and they are committing that we want to buy, but the supply is lower than the demand, which then creates an opportunity for you to focus your funding on balancing the supply with the sustainable market. So that when you are receiving the application, you prioritize those applications that have got sustainable market, because there is a government policy that is assisting you to actually see those as the most lucrative for funding. That is how I thought you would be handling the answer. To think, not only think of SIFA as SIFA, but think of SIFA as part of a South Africa that has got policies, and how those policies are going to assist you. Did you want to say something?
I think as I was sitting here, I was listening out, and exactly on the issue that you commented now, and because as I've been reading the document, one is trying to determine what is the distinct role of the department and what is that of FIFA. And therefore, one of the things that I would have responded also to the growing the book of the agency. I also like the CEO thought that one of the sources would be the FIFA, would be the priority programs. And that one of the areas that we would work together on is to determine what are those new growth sectors, what are the opportunities. And if I can mention two, one of those being the ocean's economy. I think a year ago we went through the Operation Pakistan on the ocean's economy. One of those, of the four labs, is aquaculture. And aquaculture is a new sector, a relatively new sector. And I mean, just the ocean's economy itself is, right now, this 3,000-kilometer coastline is generating an income of about 122 million. And if we do the right things by 2033, that could be increased to, so it's about 56 million now. It could increase to between 122 and 177 billion. Of that, there's the aquaculture. Aquaculture is seen as a low-hanging fruit. And it's a low-hanging fruit where you leave cooperative people along in our coastal communities, our traditional coastal communities, and in inland areas could be taken in there. Interestingly, the research showed the chairperson mentioned the turnaround times. Before the start of Pakita, from the day somebody decides, I am going to venture into aquaculture, until the day I think the person can put their first seedlings in the water, it would take 1,080 days. Because you first have to apply to the land, get the land clearance, and EIA and so one of the decisions were, let's put together an interdepartmental authorization committee in order to reduce so we've reduced the turnaround time to 234 days, which is still a lot, it's almost a year. Now the other thing that we decided on was we needed an interdepartmental fund. Because DPI has an aquaculture enhancement fund, and they fund particular category of person. Agriculture has a fund, and they pay categorize others. Now that interdepartmental fund will be placed in agencies, and because agriculture is my past life, I'm saying we will put that into the land bank. But it's really possible to put that money into CEDA. So I think there are several examples like that. So this is the one. So I think it is about deciding on what are those target areas. Instead of us going all over, and let us focus on some of the areas. Another area which I believe is an area that we can collectively make an area for small enterprises and cooperatives to participate is in renewable energy. Just approve the National Renewable Energy Project. So I think there are some targets for a significant percentage of that program must be delivered by small enterprises. Also, it must use South African technology platform. So that is another unit of work. Already, we are working with science and technology and saying, how long will it take us to get that South African technology program? And the other comment I wanted to make, Chair, maybe to run shortly, is I hear the chairperson and the CEO talking about our level of impairment, although it's reduced, it is still high. And I hear Honorable Tan, and then I think there's also the discussion on the cost to the cost of the income of 122%. And on the latter, I'm wondering, is it not a different view we should take? Because I, and I speak under correction, I don't know whether CEDA is a wealth creation agency or is it a redistributive agency. SIFA, I keep saying SIFA. Should we be measuring it just as is, or do we begin to measure the impact? Because I would assume that there's a premium to development, that CIFA are doing other things to support the kinds of things that you were talking about, and there's costs to that, which your commercial banks don't do. Again, I come from an infrastructure sector where we work in social infrastructure. So if you bring small contractors in, they at the same time as delivering that product, that project, they are also in a contractor development program. They're in training. They use labor-intensive methodologies. So there's a cost to that in order to get these small enterprises onto the path that they can be commercial and pre-commercial. And I'm wondering whether should not, what is that value that we bring? And those are the things we should measure before we say our cost to company is so high. Because I'd like to think that our service must be very different.
There was a help from the chair before you, Honorable Chair, then you will follow.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much for the comments. I think that was a quite fruitful comment. I think that if I can just take a few steps back, Chair, I had made some comments on some of the areas I would have wanted to add as my chief was commenting. I think that what you've done is to eloquently explain what could be these constraints. How do we identify what could be constraints to growth? And I think what has been eloquently put forward here is the external perspective. And I think what happened is the CEO focused very much on internal and did not look external. And I think it's a very important approach to always look at both the internal and the external approach. And I'm not going to add on what has been, on the ideas that have been put forward on external. But I think that the greatest internal constraint to growth is the capacity within the organization. Because part of what we will see influences this impairment is the limited capacity. And I think the CEO did not do a good favor of the program that has been put in place, at least as we have been informed as the board, improving the due diligence processes. Because it starts there, making sure that you identify the businesses that have potential to be sustainable and that pay. When they are not, making sure that the development strategies take place immediately. The other one is to make sure that as we lend to small businesses, and this is something we emphasized a lot in a strategy session we had with management 2 weeks ago, as we lend, we are a development organization. As we lend, we have to develop. We don't wait until people don't pay. We make sure that as we lend, because there's one reason, very important reason small businesses come to SIFA instead of Standard Bank. Because they don't meet the requirements of your normal bank. So immediately, there is an intervention that we should be putting in place as they come to apply. And that's an area that we've agreed with management that is going to be a priority as we move forward. And as the DG eloquently says it, the fact that you have to develop immediately means that you're spending money that commercial banks never have to spend. And therefore, your cost to income as a development institution would certainly be higher than your cost than your commercial bank. I think that, though, it's a ratio we have to keep monitoring, because we can easily fall into inefficiency, too. So we need to monitor it. But I think that, indeed, we can't look at it from, you know, compare it to the commercial bank. I also wanted to just add
Honorable Chance, your question around fund of funds. I think that is very important. I mean, I think that the way you put it and you add financial markets, in fact, we see CIFA as a fund of funds because we do fund funds. If you look at the partnership, for example, between Transnet, I think the CEO mentioned it, Transnet, Anglo, and CIFA, and that is funding of a fund that then manages small businesses. Are we doing the best of it? I don't think so. I think that there's still a big space to improve. For example, you mentioned financial markets. We've not even started thinking along those lines. So there's certainly a big role to play and grow in that area. And in terms of venture capital funding, one of the biggest areas of that are a challenge for us is funding of startups. And we do fund startups. But the minute you think venture capital, you always think equity too. And we only provide a debt instrument, which is not always ideal. In fact, management started raising within the organization to board, should we not be starting to look at equity? But our view as a board is, let's just make sure that we do what we're doing well. Because equity is also a different kind of capacity than what the capacity that we have at the moment. Let me stop there and continue later with the other questions. Thank you, Chair.
Back to this,
Yeah, I'd like to thank the CIFA executives and the chair for your answers. I think that this is a very important discussion we're having around the whole issue of funding for small business. And the first question I have is, to what extent, if your sessions problem is solved, is that going to impact your impairments? So what proportion of your business would be improved by getting sessions of debtors' books of your beneficiaries? First question. Second question is, where are your impairments most felt? Are they in the direct lending, the indirect lending? You know, because if it's in the direct lending, obviously that means that you personally, as an organization, have to focus on your due diligence and your post-investment monitoring. But if it's through the wholesale lending, then it's your wholesalers that have to do that work. The issue of the fund of funds, I take your point. You're halfway there, but there's a lot further to go. And if you talk to the financial markets, if you talk to the institutional finance players, you know, people like Old Mutual's Future Growth, Cadiz Enterprise Development Fund. You know, you'll find that they are doing work, but it's very small scale. And they are keen to talk to government about how this institutional mechanism can be massified. And I'll give you a good example of an innovative financial product, which is that's developed by Atlantic Asset Management. They have a deal with the Jobs Fund, but they've taken 100 million rand, sorry, 75 million rand from the Jobs Fund. And they're multiplying it 10 to 1 in the private sector. And they're already halfway to raising that 750 million. And the deal with the Jobs Fund is that becomes what they call the first loss guarantee. So it's a bit like the Gula Guarantee Fund in a sense. And they then pick their beneficiaries through mainly wholesalers. So for example, you've got the microfinance organization in Zanin, which is our closest equivalent to the Grameen Bank, and I think you also found that as one example of an institution that is successfully lending money and is getting it back. And this is why I was so disappointed when you had the workshop, Chair, in June or whatever it was, that the financial institutions were not invited, because we can't have this discussion unless everybody's sitting around the same table. And I would actually urge the committee chair that we urgently convene a meeting of those stakeholders. The entire financial ecosystem, let me repeat, government, international funders, financial institutions, enterprise development, there's 20 billion rand spent every year on ED. That's the 3% net profit after tax proportion in terms of the BE scorecard. Most of that money is being thrown against the wall and it's not sticking. We went to the ED conference earlier this week in Johannesburg. A survey that was done by Enterprise Development's practitioners reported that 86% of businesses don't believe enterprise development spend is properly spent. Huge waste of money. You know, how to increase your book? You know, there are answers to these questions. And I think that one has to think totally outside of your current box, which is very much too internally focused, and actually begin to ask more fundamental questions, consult more widely. That's the first step. I'm not sure what the answers are going to be, but you know, at least if you don't ask the question, you're not getting any answers.
Thank you. We'll proceed to the question that we asked by Honorable Mabasa. Okay, and then Honorable Mabasa.
Now, I'm making a follow-up on the question asked by Honorable Chance. I'm just worried. I just hope that when we say fund a fund, it is not a cousin or a brother to intermediaries. So if you can clarify that, and at the same time when you respond to my questions, if you can also clarify to what degree are we still funding intermediaries.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and the input from the BG. I think where I ended up was talking about, I think I covered just on the 80% exercise. I didn't go into detail, Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the area for growth. But if I can also just ask the same question, the follow-up question relating to the extension of contracts, relating to where is the biggest area of our impairment on the direct link. It's not on the or selectivity. So it's directly anywhere we have got a biggest level of impairment. And then I mentioned that we are over concentrated on contract funding. So if we can be able to, going forward, can be able to really address the challenges of sessions, I believe that it might not necessarily be the panacea, but it will make a significant improvement. And I link this to the 30% specialized that I spoke about earlier, that if that's the area where we need to be able to go in terms of assisting, and this is the area we're going to be going in terms of set aside by government, we expect that we'll have more concentration exposure in the area of contract financing. Hence, if the session then are in place, then it will be able really to push the level of operation in that respect. If I go to Honorable Mabasa's question on the poorest of the poor in terms of the funding. If you look at the 68,000 odd SMEs and cooperatives that I've mentioned in terms of where does that go to? I would safely say about 90% of that is on the micro-enterprises. So in other words, the developmental impact numbers that we have are driven largely from the micro enterprises, which is the informal sector. However, I also need to also mention, maybe link with your follow-up question of what is the extent degree of the intermediaries. So the microfinance enterprises that we funded, we did that through partners, and largely the microfinance institution. And one particular institution is the one that Honorable Charles mentioned, and the partner that we have with an institution that is based in Zanin in this space. So from an impact point of view, it takes the chunk of our funding activities. I've asked my colleague and
when you let's say 90% goes to the that informal sector, are we, should I understand that 90%, not even 90, maybe, should I understand that 70%, or now let me even reduce it to 50, 50% is going to that auntie that I described. Is it going to that auntie? Is it going, when we undertook the oversized visit, we were with officials from CIFAN, from the department, but we were with some of the officials. Those people that we visited, that old that person that was disabled, who was selling, they had vacated from the shops that they had given them, and they had said they had moved over to the taxi rank they were selling there. Are those the people that are receiving this? That auntie that sells bananas and cabbage and one box of tomatoes, I don't even want to speak of the 90, are they receiving the 50%? Because if the answer is yes, then we shouldn't have poverty. We shouldn't. And if the answer is yes, the next time we go for oversight, we're going there. I'm deliberately differentiating between the middle layer and the poorest. No, but I can only repeat myself. Let me await the response.
I want to paraphrase the question that is being asked by Honorable Mabas. I want to paraphrase the question and also invite FIFA to think out of the box. And also invite FIFA to appreciate the fact that we come from communities. We don't stay here in Parliament all the time. We undertook an oversight as this portfolio committee. We went to KwaZulu-Natal, we went to Eastern Cape, and we went to Gauteng. In KwaZulu-Natal, firstly, the objective of that oversight was to see and hear from the people that we think are the target group for the department and its entities. So in our program, we included interaction with street vendors and spaza shop owners. And the reason for us to do that was that already in the country, there was what was perceived to be xenophobic attacks, when in fact, when you go deeper, you discover that there is no South African that would just walk along the street and come across a foreign national, greet each other, and then you realize that this person is speaking a foreign language, and then you beat up that person. It has never happened in that way. And if it was xenophobia, it would happen in every street, because foreign nationals are in the churches, which would happen in the church. When you walk along the street, you come across a foreign national, you beat the foreign national because you are xenophobic. But the conflict is happening in the space of small business. In our visit, we go to Stingo. We find foreign nationals operating in the shops. Where they can afford to pay 12,000 rand. We find South Africans still operating on the pavement, on the street, using cold drink crates as what you trade from. A piece of an old door covered with an old plastic table or something. Next to this person there is a child that is crawling. And this mama is wearing torn clothes. We go to Ezmule. We find a man, South African, that is operating from a makeshift corrugated type of tuck shop. On the counter is his 1 year plus month child. Because the wife is working as in a piece job. And next to this corrugated is a wheelbarrow, because this person has to take all the stuff and put it in the wheelbarrow in the afternoon, because the corrugated iron makeshift tuck shop is not safe. So he waits for his wife to come and assist him carry the child and push the wheelbarrow, because this person is disabled. And he started this business by utilizing the pension that he got. Across him is a fully fleshed container, well stocked, with well settled. It has got burglar guards. And the municipal manager doesn't orientate us. He just puts us there. And then I walk across. I greet this person who is selling in this well-stocked container. I greet that person in isiZulu, because I'm from KwaZulu-Natal and this woman is in KwaZulu-Natal. And this person can respond to me because the foreigner. I then switch over to English. I ask her, who owns this? The owner is not here. What is being asked by Honorable Mabasi relates to those people that we found in, not only as in Moleni. When we went to O.R. Tambo, again we went before. Look at them. They are operating from things that you would not even think that how do they survive on rainy days, when there's wind, on sunny days, all those things. Because if we are talking micro, we should be able to differentiate from a person who is operating in a barber shop like the one that was operated by a foreign national in Moulin, and the one that is operated by a South African. And I am sitting here, voted to be here by South Africans. And if our responsibility here cannot address those needs of South Africans, we may also arrive at a situation where we are saying we don't know whose interests we are representing by being here. So, services that need to be provided and positioning DSI should be informed by what we are explaining. So, today we want an explanation, good. What services and what funding is geared towards enabling that person who is a street vendor to sell in a decent environment and also make decent money and grow from there? Because if we are not looking at that, this country will burn one day. Because South Africans will run out of patience when we are here and we cannot address their felt needs, not the perceived needs, not what we think they want, what they are saying they want.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I wanted just to clarify, on the below the detailed annual report, page 46 in particular, I wanted to clarify that the funding activities in terms of the impact. I just want to, it's impact and it's from an impact provision, not from the total amount of funding on the 1.3 billion. If page 46, there's a table at the bottom, that reflects the support to SMEs and cooperatives that provide a quantification in terms of what have we done through the wholesale lending products, through financial intermediaries, and then micro enterprises. I want to just look at this column that talks about micro enterprises, where you see 66,000, that's in terms of the impact. The average loan that... That is the enterprises that were funded on our behalf by intermediaries.
We are not on the same page. We are not on the same page because you are looking at what CIFA gave to the intermediaries and what was lended out by the intermediaries. Yes. Without looking at the impact to say, did they really grow? Because our experience is saying they don't know.
Intermediaries grow.
Reason being, even the loan that is given to them has got a very high interest rate. Number two, the training that is given to them, if we are going to say the training because you responded and said there is training, but if when we interact with them, they can't differentiate between what belongs to the business that they are running and what belongs to them, the owner of the business. If they say, okay, what are you selling? I'm selling apples. Do you make profits? You say yes. How do you say that to make profit? If I buy my box of apples with 100 cents and I've made 120 rents, I've made 20 rent profit. And I am saying no. Because in that box of apples that was purchased at 100 rand. There's transport. There's money that you need to pay because you are working now in your business. So you must earn. So, if the training that is given cannot enable them to understand the meaning of the 100 rand that they got, what is the turnover? What are all the costs besides what you spent to buy the box of apples? Because there are other costs. And the training is not sufficient because they still use the very same money that belongs to the business as their money. Which would then impact on the repayment because they can't differentiate, but they don't pay themselves if they last. They use what belongs to the business. So, the target group that SIFA is not the intermediary. The target group of SIFA is the person who comes to the intermediary. And if you can't analyze the impact to the person who comes to the intermediary, then you are missing the point.
Attempt to respond to Ms. Mabasa's, Honorable Mabasa's question directly in supporting my chief. You will remember, Honorable Mabasa, that when we came to the portfolio committee some time back, we talked about these intermediaries, the microfinance intermediaries in particular, that we were working through them. And this, the mama who's saying those routes, are the clients that they actually lent on advice, and because we do take cognizant of the comments that come from the portfolio committee on you know, the discomfort around the intermediaries, especially the cost to the client. What was projected on slide number 23, which is the Durban Mangaung Fresh Produce Market, is an effort SIFA to say, let's have a product that directly supports that target group. At the moment, the pilot, as it says there on the page, we're still testing that in terms of trying to do it directly, with supporting, with support, of course, from other institutions, but we're trying to deal, whilst we're dealing with the issue of microfinance intermediaries. So I think my CEO is trying so hard, but the truth of the matter is, having taken the comments, we are piloting a project that will address that. We are not yet at a stage where we can give you concrete answers because we had to do research after we came from here. We did research. How can we intervene in this area? What's going to be the technology or whatever, what are the systems that we need to make sure that we can service this sufficiently and efficiently? And the pilot is in response to that.
Yeah, it's a very painful discussion, this one. Very, very painful. Because if we cannot interact with the poorest of the poor directly, we are not going to make a difference in their everyday living. And this language of intermediaries, we started fighting this language even as long back as while we were at EDD. You remember that, you know, we were saying, but, and you know what is very characteristic with these intermediaries? Most of them are white, you know, white, and with fleshy cars. Where you see a little woodje, we are seeing what better. Then, the people that are supposed to be served, it is the black Africans most. Let me say that I'm completely dissatisfied with this aspect, especially if one takes it in as a conglomerate when put in these the housing 25, what do we call them? Walk in 25, if we walk 25 there, We take the intermediaries there, Sulafaye, Obonge for 21, then they exhaust all this money from FIFA. And then something must trickle down to those poor mothers that are on the streets. Because, I mean, if the CEO says 90% goes to the poorest of the poor, those people that are at Bree Street taxi rank that are selling there, do we ever interact with them? Those people that are at Barra, Chris Hart Barra, those that are selling bananas, peanuts, do we ever interact with them? Or we hand intermediaries to them? Those people that are, some of them are loners, when you find in a certain street, in a certain block, there's just that one woman who's had poor bananas that are no longer, the color is almost black, you know, and then with some digits. That's what she's selling every day. And then I looked at one week now at the city. I realized she was starting with 3 cabbages. But this day she has grown to 8 cabbages. I look at her, she finds it's 8, and then you find, and you look at, the chairperson described exactly how poor they look. If and we are not saying it is, but if we want to send intermediaries to those people, we will still come here after 20 years. We will no longer be here, of course, that time. Those members of parliament that will be there will find intermediaries. We are not going to meet it.
I'll start with Honourable Chance and then come to the teaching.
Yeah, and I hope Honourable Chance speaks my language, but it says,
regrettably not. I think, Honourable Master, your comments need to be understood and unpacked. First of all, the comment about the white intermediaries. Actually, the regulations of the Financial Services Board has resulted in over 20,000 black-owned intermediaries, providers of finance, having to close down. That's the fact. And this is the unintended, another of these wonderful things called the unintended consequences of legislation and regulations. So, you know, don't talk to the Treasury about this. Don't criticize FIFA. Go talk to the Treasury as to why these regulations, which have tightened up the capital adequacy ratios for intermediaries, has resulted in massive redundancies and closure of these businesses. Number two, it's physically impossible for CIFA to go out and do direct lending to businesses requiring loans of 500 rand. It's just not feasible. They don't have a footprint, which is why they appoint intermediaries. Number three, indeed, some intermediaries are overcharging in terms of interest. Those intermediaries should be identified and weeded out. But bear in mind that they are working within the framework of the law, which sets interest rates. And number four, CIFA has already made it clear to us that their impairment ratio is greater in the direct lending than it is through their indirect lending, which is mainly through intermediaries. So I think that your whole argument actually falls down on all of those points. And I think that we need to understand CIFA's rationale. I'm not saying it's perfect, but we cannot dismiss the idea of intermediaries. It is an absolutely vital channel for retailing loans to small businesses, including the poorest of the poor. But bear in mind this thing. The question that was asked by the DG earlier, possibly because I mentioned it yesterday, is he in the business of wealth creation or in redistribution? And that's a good question. We need to ask that question and have answers to it. But poorest of the poor often are not creating businesses. They're creating their jobs for themselves. That's different from creating a business. But the question I'm asking is, should CIFA be playing in that space? Or should it be a role for the Department of Social Development that is actually handing out grants to people, not growing businesses that are employing people? So this is a question that the committee needs to ask. Is what is the business of the department and its agencies? Is it growing businesses, or is it handing out grants to people in need? Thank you, Chair.
No, I'm not going to take the decision. I'm going to take the Honourable Bell and then the Deputy Minister. I will also come in with this argument.
Now, thanks, Chair. I think it's incorrect for a member to refer us to the Treasury, to go and ask the Treasury, because we are interrogating the report that is given to us by the FIDA. I think it's very incorrect for us to refer to FIDA.
Thank you very much, as we indicated on the apologies that we leave at one, because we have to be in Johannesburg. It's a pity that we have this limited time to discuss these issues. And to me, they need to be unpacked in a proper context, so that then you are able then to follow as to what is it that you have to do and what is it, which entity does what and whoever. But taking from CIFA as an entity that migrated from the economic development now to the small business department, surely they indicated from last year, their mandate at times was not, they were not dealing with some of people that we feel that they should be dealing with. They were working under different contexts, but I think to me it's totally not then taking into account what has been happening in terms of government entities and why they are formed from government entities. Because to me, there is a vehicle that must assist people. And in particular, I see CIFA role as giving people even 200 low, even giving them 500 low. You cannot say that CIFA is not an entity that cannot give people that money. Because they are formed by government to make sure that they can be able to assist everybody. But in particular, we are biased to the poor people, which some of them will need to even the other grants to go and stop, whatever to go and sell. And it is within that context then that I believe, as we are starting for a developmental state, we should be able to have such entities that be able to talk to the majority of the people. That's a previously disadvantage in any way. And in terms, we all know, people who live here, who were born here, will know very well that most of the majority of the people were not part of the economic mainstream, were not allowed, the criteria conditions were not allowing them to be part then of these institutions. And it cannot be right then to say that, no, this is an organization that must continue with the middle person type of the agency that must give the service. I mean, we shouldn't be encouraging that. To me, it's wrong. Yes, maybe 20,000 loans down, but at the same time, as a government that's only got entities, that the department cannot be able to reach every corner. Hence then, we have CIFA and CIDA to make sure that to realize our mandate, they can be out there assisting the people that we feel that, as the Honorable Mabasa said, they're selling their hawkers, selling for a living. And to me, they're not even small, they are your survivalists, because they survive on what they sell, and they're able then to, but surely they must graduate, they cannot be standing there for 5, 10, 20 years, which is why then we've got a focused department now of small business, not under teacher, not under economic development, but a department that will be able to really be able to see those women that Honorable Mabasa is talking about. So at the end of the day, they cannot remain small forever. You start small, but you must grow. President, this year when he opened Parliament, he said, small business is big business. The way I understood it is that you start small, but at the end, you must end up being a big business. On Monday, we were called to come and celebrate a company that started in 1995. That is owned by Dr. Anna Mokoko. He started in 1995. With a small business, but today it has grown to the extent that she has opened outlets globally, and she trades at the Wall Street, not in Johannesburg now. We talk about such people that we must assist them as government. Because if it wasn't of government, she could not have succeeded from 1995 to now 20 years, that now she's running a holding company that is doing so much in Africa and globally. So it is within the new government that she was able to do that. So a democratic dispensation. You could not do that during apartheid. And for me, really, we should have the same review, PG, as a department established to really focus now and deal with the small business in a particular way that we will be able to look even the lending agencies. Because for me, I really don't... it is very funny that a person would go to business, I give that an example, to business partners, the interest that poor entrepreneur or small business will pay is more than what you can pay at NetBank or South Bank. Surely it defeats the whole purpose of having the DFIs that are focused on developmental. Yes, they must do business at the end of the day. Maybe they must have a balance sheet, they must do whatever, but the primary establishment of those entities was to assist. And really, as IDC now, it started assisted by government, but it can now generate a lot of money and all those things. I think SIPA is one entity that if you look at it, it came from the amalgamation of your SAMAF, KULA, and other small business from IDC, then to form this particular small enterprise finance agency. And in that regard, we shouldn't be encouraging more middle type of person organization to continue. To me, we must be able to make sure that SIFA can assist the poorest of the poor, that will be able to make a difference instant. It's a pity that I have to leave, but to me, I have a much voice, my view in terms of that particular issue. Because if you continue to give more to the agencies that are like giving assistance, then we'll not achieve our desired goal within the national, the NDT, which states clearly what you must do from now till in 2030 is what you want. So surely we need to have a relook in terms of the agencies that exist. Make sure that they can then, whether you say restructuring or whatever, they must talk to what should happen so that at the end of the day, then we experience, we do have responsibility as government to make sure that we cannot, but promoting the agencies that are then lending to the poor, I don't think is ideal situation, Jennifer, of the board. We should find the mechanism. To me, the hybrid model will work much better. And that's why the Grameen Bank were successful. Because they were able to look at how the person, how poor is the person, rather than what is it that will take as if this person can pay back the money, and form into groups of poor people. And the criteria for them, that you must prove how poor you are so that you qualify for the loan. It's totally opposite. That's what you do. You must prove what is it, your house? Where is your house? If it's in Kailish or whatever, no, it doesn't. From part of the collateral. But then, do you have a card? Do you have whatever that you can take? And to me, that model is wrong. Because it cannot talk properly to what you want to achieve. We are unequal. We know very well in South Africa. We are one of the countries that the Gini coefficient is one that is very high. For our democracy for 21 years, we just closed the gap. But the gap is keep on increasing because some of what we do, it is also given to the lending agencies, they charge people money, and after all, they're rich. And the people that are supposed to get the service are more poor. So surely there should be some up 20 years. My take is that we now have a clue as to what is working and not working. And we should be taking that should assist the majority of the people there as part of what they do so that we can realize it. Otherwise, if you just do data skill on what you used to do, it won't assist us. So I believe that the show, as we deliberate, we'll be able to meet again and discuss. After the annual report, surely there should be more discussions in terms of intervention and what they need to shift in terms of what was ideally mandate of CIFA now under the new dispensation of what is affected. And then how do we then change and then become really the agency that is there assisting people. The majority is biased to poor people. Thank you very much. I think I have to cut the discussion there.
Thank you very much. I just want to make one.
input here. We have three departments that I'm going to mention. We have the Department of Social Development. That has been mentioned yesterday and today. The department that will be looking after the street vendors and the people that you're talking about. That department is already overwhelmed. Provides grants, provides food parcels. We have the Department of Trade and Industry that is interacting with people that are already wanting to fly and those that are already flying. We then have, let's go back to the past 10 years. Trade and Industry was tasked to look after small and big. And as a result, the small business suffered. Hence the establishment of this department, which has to look down, not up. Therefore, we can't be saying CIFA, who is an agent of the Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development, because if you are given a mandate to develop small businesses and cooperatives, you are therefore the Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development. It can't be the other way around. Now, you are tasked to develop small business, but then it is said you must help people create wealth. It's not about wealth. The people that we are talking about are people that can't even afford 3 meals a day. It's people who cannot afford to buy their own children school uniforms. They are selling on the streets. The money that they make is not enough for them to buy their own children a school uniform. They can't operate from a decent actual, it's corrugated iron LIU. Yes, 1 square meter. Put it in back and tap back in a wheelbarrow. Who's going to look after that person if we are saying ISIFA has to focus on creating wealth? And then we are saying it's okay to have intermediaries that are charging a high interest rate. It's okay to overlook the stock fair, because with stock fair there is no default. Because for you to work with the community, you must understand the culture of the community, the tradition, what works for them before you even come. And you then enhance and further develop what they already have. That is what development is about. Development is about going to the community, learn how they do things, what are the shortages, and then build on what they already know and what already exists. If when I needed food meat, my mother sent me to a stock fair with a letter, if she could go, and I would come back with a loan in the afternoon for me to pay the school fees at school, why can't you see a stock fair as the perfect institute that we can work with instead of an intermediary? Because a cooperative acts as an association, and the stock fair is an association. It's people developing their own rules,
on how they are going to lend themselves money, and what interest they will charge, and how they will grow. Those firms were not supported by the apartheid government. They can't remain in the same place now when they said a democratic government. So, all that we are saying is, we should appreciate the fact that we are dealing with the annual performance report of 2014 and 2015, which is talking to what was being done then when we were reporting, where you were reporting to. And now we are talking about what needs to happen when you are reporting to us, because we have a different mandate, a different target group. So we can't then be thinking that it is correct to give the money to the intermediaries when we know the impact of that. And we know that there are structures in the community that can better play that role. So let us not create a political debate. Maybe if this country was under another party, then we would say Isiba is for creating wealth. But for as long as the government is the ANC, our understanding of the role of Isiba is not to create wealth. It is to address issues of inequality. It is to address issues of unemployment. It is to address issues of poverty. And poverty is, you see people selling on the streets, those are poor people who are selling on the street. A wealthy person will not sell on the street.
You see, Comrade Chair, I'm addressing the department here. In Parliament, there are different political parties. The African National Congress is here on the ticket of representing, amongst others, and mainly, the poorest of the poor. Once you hear yourselves as a department, once you hear a representative of DA praising you and coming to your rescue, you must get worried. Once Honorable Charles...
I object that is an utterly irresponsible comment.
Oh, okay, no, let me leave it back there. So you must worry, you know.
You know, the distinction I wanted us to make is that the Department of Small Business is not, there is a starting point, and the starting point is you focus on those people that were denied participation in the mainstream economy. And you find them on the street. Street vendors, they must be, we forget. And there, you start by not creating wealth. It's not for enriching people that are already. So, I just want to make that clarity. Good. Isiba can't be for making people wealthy. When the challenges that have been identified in the NDP is poverty, unemployment, and inequality. Can Chair respond to the remaining questions?
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, Chairperson. And the input that has been raised, we are an organization in transition, as you correct, so we are reporting the historical financial information for 2019. We are mindful of what we need to do going forward. I think we'll start looking at alternatives. And I think I just want to just to highlight that. There was my colleague later will respond on the question of the working 21. I just want to maybe touch on the issue of the interest rate, 50,000 to 5 million, the direct lending. The average interest rate on the direct lending is about 18.9. 18.9 will provide funding directly to
to small businesses. As you indicated, the one for indirect lending is significantly high, as we said previously. There was a question that was raised, Honorable Mabasa. What is wholesale cooperative? Maybe the terminology, wholesale is just a division. But the, what, how we structured ourselves is that the competencies around looking at the cooperative activities sit within the wholesale division. I think that when we just put wholesale behind it, it just basically say that we're just classifying it in terms of the from a division point of view. But otherwise, CIFA is CIFA. Within CIFA, in terms of the activities that we've done on cooperatives. If cooperatives as regard to funding that we use, we provide utilizing our cooperative financial institutions, where those that have got savings, they form a cooperative, and then they go through the cooperative financial institutions, and they get members that benefit in terms of the loans from their own savings from the financial services cooperatives. And we also have what we call the cooperative enterprise, which is a group of cooperatives themselves that get the funding from our institution to provide the distinct. I admit as part of the presentation that we have been found wanting on the cooperative space. I mean, this is the trajectory going forward where we identify the chairperson of the portfolio indicated the area of the value chain, particularly in the agricultural space. Those are new areas that we've identified that we can be able to do more. But historically, on the cooperatives, there hasn't been much of the activity, and that's what we are reporting on what transpired.
That kind of response is different. Yes, we want to work with cooperatives, but we have not been working with them in the past. We like that.
Okay, I want to also respond on the question of people with disabilities. I think why we didn't mention it on the table. We didn't mention it because we didn't have it. We didn't fund the businesses owned by people with disabilities. So we didn't achieve our target. So if you see on the later on the the detailed annual report which shows the balance focus in terms of activities, page 58 and 59. You will notice that we fall zero on percentage of facilities dispersed with people with disabilities, which we had a 2% target. We had actual zero because we didn't achieve. So hence, we didn't disclose it on the presentation.
When we have been out as a portfolio committee with the department on oversight, because it happened this year, question that I want to ask is, after we've been out there, do you meet, does the department call you as its agent to share with you what they have seen out there? Or they don't go out. We went, we accompanied the portfolio committee, and we will get back and not share the information that we came across and not spend the time at the participant after an oversight visit. Even before the report, what value is derived from the fact that when we go out, we are joined by the department? And last year, and we also went out beginning of this year. Was there any meeting where you talked the department called you and you sat down and shared the experiences of what was discovered out there. Open me up, please, Jose. When I go back, when we are called.
We interact with the Department for Public Time in terms of workshop. This workshop that the department held recently, she was also present at the CEDA office, where we are looking in terms of
if they have been out with the portfolio committee and they came across, they share that information. They share. And through that information, we are able to identify our blind spots.
That's a difficult one, Chair. Maybe I want to give a contest.
That's where the problem is. There is a project that we visited called SHAP. That project is located 3 houses away from where Jeffrey Dumo lives. All the people that are in there are disabled people. It was started by Mavos.
Friday
Mavos. Members of the portfolio committee were there. Labobande Mizwa, they tried to hear. It's something that we continued to talk about, because they are producing protective wear that is used by traffic cops in the mines. They are reflectors. They own the premises because it's premises that were built through funding straight by Friday Mavos. They are the owners of the machines. And because they have not been assisted, a very clever white person who wanted to get the 100% scorecard, because all the workers are disabled people, saw an opportunity, brings the material to them, cuts, make a trim, pack, gives it back to, that person is a finished product, to sell to the municipalities that are owned by the government, to sell to Prasal, to sell to Abo Transnet, anyone who puts that is working for the government. They can't even, they don't make a profit as well as the Babas who cook it up. Okay. Because the person who gives them the material doesn't have a cost, a mission, who cook up for a labor, using the premises that that person doesn't pay for. They are living conditions. Because Bahala in Karo hated iron sheds where there are no toilets. Makeshift toilet. And we can take you there. Jeff Dumo lives 3 houses away from
that project. If Tina, your project has changed after that, we tried. Supposed to be the story that Jeff shared with you. And in shifting the mindset, if indeed, you would have then gone there. Those people said, what is it that they want? So, not going out to our communities and also not understanding who the target market is. It's a fully fledged factory. But they are not benefiting those people because what they are paid for is labor. If they were subsidized for that building and they were provided with a person who's going to assist them to do their own marketing and take advantage of the policies that are there, buy from cooperatives and SMMEs, it is market, the sustainable market of those protected jackets, the government. That is what they were asking with. If Sihambile Sayago oversight, none. Umasayisi buyele kwi-oversight, niyahlala yini nikhulume ukuthi nibonini. Nokuba ukuthi nina, you were accompanying the portfolio committee. It's the portfolio committee that has to run itself. Ukuthi bafike babona. Ama-officials zona, kade kwi-repression. Expression, bebeyozivukela, mabhilidi, balale hotela. No change.
Thank you, Chair. I responded on the cooperatives. The other question in terms of the fixed vendors engagement, as I said, I think that's the line. That area service through our partners, the intermediary. So I think it's one of the areas we have picked up that we may naturally also attend, intensify that internally. So the although we do study as part of this, how are they satisfied with the services of our partners? But in terms of ongoing activities, one area that we need to improve.
It's not difficult to visit these people directly.
No, it's not difficult.
It's really so difficult. Do we have to still have intermediaries, But, hey, and you know, sorry Chair, I didn't even ask for permission, but I don't think I'll speak after this. You know, there is this thing that we rely on you to take us out of that practice, you know. We rely on you. We rely on you to accept that impempeya la bishamu to ukono tahawe. Thanks, colleague Chair. I just thought I must just remind them as we go on.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Northern Cape question relating to our activities. We do have, Northern Cape is a very vast province. We do have an office at, in Kimberley. We have identified the need to really have co-location in other areas, Kuruman, Upington, so that we can be able to really increase our funding activities. Again, the role of co-location with our sister agencies, so we'll be able to really be able to do more in the area than the 70.83 million we've done for the previous financial year. The collaboration with the CBDA is the Cooperative Bank Development Agency that regulates the cooperative. So that's what I was referring to. And then just to come back briefly, as I said earlier, the people's disability, we didn't really do much, but it's safe to say that there are some funding that we've done since the year to date, so about 4.5
about 5 million, about 5 million that we've done to two entities. The one is in the construction, they're all in the construction space, that is civil engineering. One in Gauteng and one in the Western Cape, about 5 million. But again, as I said, it's one area of improvement. And later on, I will ask my colleagues to really talk to on the walk in 25. It was asked when walk in 25, and on the issue of the bakery, I will ask my colleague Albert Berst to also put comments on the bakery. So the other will just take us on the working 24. She's the executive responsible for all the link and cooperatives.
Good afternoon, honourable chair and honourable members. My task is just to take you through what we've learned from the interventions or for other organizations relating to walking 25 and what we have incorporated in a way forward in interacting and supporting the SMEs that are supported.
My main question here is the principle of establishing walk-in 25 such that it is walk-in 25 that as if the township shops, you know, etc. There are three people there, white people. Those are the people that the government gives money to so that they do that task. I was giving an example with our CFO. The people that have BCOMs, you know, others have masters in finance, etc. Are we saying if we group such youth and say to them, do this task for these shops, will it be so bad? Do we really have to say to go and hunt for white people who come and they so that the path that they take, why are we convinced that they must take that part, and then the rest then is then going over to shops. That's the main thing. I know their intention is to help, but I also know their intention is to make super profit. Actually, the money that goes to them is just shooting. So if you can speak more to that, what convinced you that this is a viable vehicle of helping township and rural shops to grow?
Thank you, Chair. From our side, what actually convinced us is that we interacted with all the partners that were involved, including the stakeholders. That started with the DTI conversations in terms of what was their contribution to the previous Walk-in 25 model. And also the private sector players, the traditional authority, and the shop owners themselves. What is it that they want to change? And in that model, exactly the part that you're talking about, are these three people the only people that can deliver the services? In that model, the members of the cooperatives are now empowered to participate in the administration and the functioning, because when Walk-in 25 is not around, they are there. People, if you're looking at the growth trajectory, if they want to establish their own as a secondary cooperative, they should, in the next 2-3 years, be able to understand all that is happening in their business, because they understand the local environment even better than Walk-in 25. We then also looked at who gets funded in the program, and although they get assisted by Walk-in 25, we fund the members directly, and they form a cooperative, and they contract directly with us. You remember the CEO mentioned that we have a structured finance solution that assist us in knowing exactly where the benefits are going, if what the technical partner, which is what we call strategic partners, is bringing exactly what it was supposed to bring. The other element is that we then talk to the other partners to continue the support, so that if the model of bulk buying really works to address the issues that were identified by the Hanam tribal authority which we are working with, they get addressed. We then indicated to also the management team that ongoing monitoring is not saying we will rely on Working 25 to do the work that we want to aspire to do with the entrepreneurs, but we also actively participate in monitoring, ongoing monitoring of this particular initiative. We scale down the cost of establishing the business significantly, and we have performance clauses that are allocated to that and development support that the team will actually administer from the SIFA side, not from the Working 25 side. I know it is a difficult discussion that we had, even with Working 25, we had those difficult discussions and guided by the portfolio committee, our board, and also the executive team, saying we need to really follow through what we aspire to do with our strategic partners. There needs to be a market failure. There needs to be transformation in terms of empowerment of the people that are actually running the shops to talk to the elements that the chairman of the portfolio committee talked to. Does the shop owner know what it actually costs to run the business? And does the shop owner derive benefit from not driving as a person to wherever she was shopping and getting back? So is the bulk buying working? So we evaluate all those as we start working. This is an initiative that was approved. We are now in the process of rolling it out. It is not an easy task, Chair, but we are using now the structured finance solution to help establish the needs of the entrepreneurs. Over and above that, I must say that when it comes to the empowerment of the poorest communities in the country, we've looked at the value chain financing very extensively, and we have targeted away from Working 25. So,
do you thoroughly understand the formula of Working 25 and the money that go to those three white people, and also the contract for how long is Working 25 in terms of those three people that sold the model? Do you know how long they are going to work with SIFA, the founding, because that's where I am. And remember, when you respond to it, also ask yourself, will it have been so bad to get our graduates, young graduates, to come up with a model that addresses the three challenges? Because you see, if you have people doing things for you, those three people, that, and the formula that they are using, they regard it as their sole intellectual property. So then the main question there is, do you understand? If you understand, do you think it is a wise thing to have gone on with Working 25? Because we are supposed to protect the people we are saving. It is us who must say, no, you business people in Orlando, there's no need for you to fail to do these things on yourselves. Instead of getting Working 25 to come and do things for them, really, you are not empowering them. Especially because it is intellectual property of Working 25, and Working 25 is just being given money wire.
Chair, I will not give the right value numbers of how we actually restructured the transition, but we've changed a lot in terms of how we actually interact with them, and we've looked at how the flows of money in the model are, and also...
I'm asking you to give.
I don't have the rent and rent and cent amount of the whole model in front of me. We can
ratio,
provide
ratio
that.
Form. Ratio form. Exhibit form, ratio form.
I don't have a detail of the transaction in front of me. I can provide it later.
The question is, we must be very careful not to do things on behalf of our communities that we do represent without understanding things thoroughly. And this is the leadership, this is the claim. These things should be at your fingertips. So that's why I still argue. And it makes me to have fear. But we must be careful about all these partnerships that we are entering into. We must be sure that we are confident it is in the interest of the poorest of the poor. I think I'm done, colleague chair. Sorry. And I apologize to you. I've been a bit of a shortcut person today. It's not right.
Chair, thank you. We have taken the note of the guidance from Honorable Mabasa, and we went through a very thorough due diligence on this transaction, and the executive team was happy to look at it and restructure it as a structured finance solution for SIFA.
My question on this is are you rolling out that model throughout the country, or you are piloting?
Chair, we are piloting it.
Where are you piloting?
In Akhanang, in Akhanang, in Limpopo.
Piloting in Limpopo.
In Limpopo,
the walking device one. Yes, it's being piloted
in Limpopo.
When it was done in Orlando East, it was said it was being piloted. I think that's about 4 or 5 years back. So if it is still being piloted, if it is now being piloted in Limpopo, did the pilot not serve the purpose that was done in Orlando, in Soweto? What is the reason of now piloting? Because we must be careful not to be piloting. You know, we're piloting this, we must be very careful. Why? What is the feedback from Orlando in terms of piloting? What makes you to go and pilot in another province?
Chair, we got feedback from 4 institutions. The feedback that we got from DTI, we got the feedback from Suzanne, we got the feedback from NEF. Out of that feedback, we abstracted certain things that were promised, some of the things that were promised by the promoter were not done. And NEF,
you said promoter you're referring to?
One of those three. The three that Mr. Mabaze is mentioning, I won't mention it.
And the performance in the pilot in Soweto, had things that were promised by them, which were not done. But you still also had to do that in Limpopo. Same group of people.
The number of institutions which were supposed to benefit as the concept of bulk buying is sometimes attractive, but when people actually put it to reality, you bulk buy because you have a significant volume and you get discounts out of that retail volume. That didn't happen. We also had a discussion with the CDI, the people that were actually at the forefront of this transaction. They gave us feedback. Part of it was that the facility that was provided, if you look at the infrastructure that was provided, it was too expensive for the cash flow of the business. And the committee shall recall that the CEO always mentioned that we provide loans on the back of cash loans. And if, for instance, you provide an infrastructure of 500,000 and the business cannot support, the cash loans cannot support 500,000, we then look back and take out a number of rails. That is one of the things that we've done in this transaction. I would like to stop there.
Now, I would close this debate by saying that maybe what needs to happen is for SIDA to be given, for SIDA to be given an opportunity to present the Work-in 25 model to the portfolio committee. And in that presentation, you also include the lessons learned from the pilot in Soweto and how those then are mitigated. Lessons that were negative, which made it to fail if it failed, and how would that then be mitigated in the new pilot. But also benchmark that a model of working 25 to other models, because bulk buying would be secondary cooperative of the primary co-op. For people who understand the cooperative concept, so you would not need an outsider to do that. You would actually identify people with professional skills to play that role of making the secondary cooperative provide the services that are required by the sponsor shops and those people that are sitting there. So that is what I would say, to say both the department and SIFA should come and present to us the working 25 model, lessons learned from the pilot, and how it was modified, and what is it that we expect, the expected end result in terms of the development of the group that we are talking about.
And thus far, from the first interaction with the three, up to now, what the amount of funds that has gone to the three? And also, but try to do it in such a manner that we can be able to follow in the accounting books, you know, whether it means going to trade and industry, etc., so that, you know, you don't have to stamp track it. So we must be able to follow, to track it.
Chairperson, members, it's been a very instructive discussion. And it's very clear that that we have to do our work and play our role as the executive authority and from the department to be able to support the minister in playing that role. But I think that, as and if the word is in fairness or whatever, we're talking here about 2014-15, when CIFA was reporting to EDD, and my understanding is to establish it's still its legislative framework in the legislation that governs IDC, and therefore they targeted the different markets. And so those are the things that we have to be looking at, because and part of our work with coordination and giving leadership is to say who is that to understand that population of enterprises, small business cooperatives, and who does what. I cannot see that one agency, one of the public has to do everything. Because here we have CIFA, we have CEDA, we have a cooperative development agency which is not yet established. You have your local development development agencies like Ntinga, and you've got provincial government development agencies like Kala, etc., etc. I think part of our work is to understand all of that. But I think that I know that IDC, even in infrastructure, did not support small contractors and small states. It was very, very big mega projects, etc. I think there's a philosophy, and as we've got to assert and sister the entity with that shift in focus. I think another question that has surfaced here is the business model, surfaced very strongly. And I guess it's something that we as government must problematize, because if I can use the parallel, there's also the parallel of the land bank, who also use this very same model that any members will keep questioning so robustly. So you add structures like investment, NCFR, etc., that use that model exactly. Who got the money from government, gave the money to farmers and said, you can only get the support if you buy your tractors, your seeds, your whatever from us, and they became these huge conglomerates by creating this dependence. Now, and today, 21 years later, I think that 96% of clients of land bank are still the commercial farmers. They haven't developed an appetite to support the small farmers. So therefore, I think as government enter, that model that we are criticizing people for is a model that is elsewhere. And I'm curious about what is the legislation that supports that? Because in the meantime, you're going to have CIFA taking a management fee for the money going through them. You have that intermediary taking a management fee. And eventually the amount of money that is available to the small businesses, and of course the interest that it does. I'm saying so we will pay interest in the business model.
We called that in the last meetings, we called that an all station train that gets money from Treasury and then drops it along the road, along the railway line. By the time this train arrives to SMMEs and cooperatives, there's very little left.
And maybe the last thing that I've learned, Chair, is that we as the department have to be very clear about what our targets are. Yesterday when we presented to you, there were some targets around co-location. And in fact, I think one of the members asked us, how many co-location centers have you established? Now clearly, the department is not going to establish the co-location centers. We don't have to sign the agreement. The agreement is what CEDA and CIFA are going to be signing with Winslet, and we have a role in enabling it. So I think it's a very practical example. Given the fact that the entity only started reporting to us as from the 1st of April, the memorandum of agreement was only signed the other day, I think last week or 2 weeks ago. I don't believe that we have influenced the current year's ATP and SANS, but I think I can see that there's between the accounting authority and the executive authority, there definitely is an intent to take CIFA on another path. I think taking into consideration what the mandates of other organizations are. We can, I think we cannot expect CIFA in my view to be everything. But I think I've made the point. Another service that I believe we must execute as national government is this thing, I think you made the point around due diligence. I don't think that anywhere in government there is a central database. Because it's very possible that some of the enterprises that get support from NYA, that get support from rural development, that get support, could be the very same entities. And so there's also a problem in agriculture, there's the Mafisa loan. And there the intent is very much higher. So I think that's another thing that they're working on that. And so that we can't, because we can't have people double-dipping. And people who are clever would be taking loans from different parts of government for the same thing, and never the threshold meet. We don't actually know that. So I think another one is around the effective use of the resources that we are entrusted to.
I just want to ask two more questions. On this slide, slide number 5. You yourself are a subsidiary. CIFA is a subsidiary of Adjusin. And CIFA has got subsidiary according to this slide. And on top of subsidiaries, CIFA has got joint ventures. And on top of joint ventures, CIFA has got associates. Then, in your presentation, you say you implement most of your programs in partnership with these people. And in that way, you reach more SMMEs than. But in your slide and in your presentation, you don't talk about what exists in communities where we come from. You don't mention Isofela. You don't mention the organizations like NAFISA. Which is an umbrella body of the CFI. And if South Africa is demarcated in terms of what municipalities, provinces, and national, and the nearest structures where you find people, one, it would be a municipality, it would also be a ward. Then, if you are not interacting with the structures that are found in each and every ward, how you then impact on the ground? Also on slide number 38, you talk of
on challenges. What I would want to understand, which is, there are challenges associated with the social economy, such as cooperatives and social enterprises. But if you can elaborate on what are these challenges and what have you done to understand them and how they can be addressed. And then the last one is to understand whether in providing the service that you are mandated to, you then come across hindering factors. Have you made any recommendations to the department, particularly about the regulations? You remember Honorable Chan spoke about the regulations of the Treasury, which have impacted negatively on CFIs, resulting with some of them being closed up. When you come across that situation, and it's been a constituency in Ungele, that would then say something good. We're supposed to be making progress, but there is a regulation that is affecting us. And then what are we recommending that it be done in order to overcome that hindering factor that is resulting with so many CFIs being closed down? And lastly, I have not heard how, what systems you put in place as SLIPA and the department to assess the financial impact of the financial support given to SMMs and cooperatives. But also, you must also remember what the cooperatives and the SMMs are different types of animals. Although the mandate is same service, SMMs and cooperatives, but cooperatives have got a different, through cooperatives would achieve different end results as the end results that would achieve through our SMME. So those are totally two different animals in a society. The cooperative addresses both the social and economic conditions in a community. The SMME, it addresses the economic condition of the owners of the SMME. Very little in terms of social condition of the people, because the SMME is a profit-driven structure. Cooperative is based on solidarity, addressing social problems and economic problems in a community. So they have got different issues that they address. So if you then have to assess the impact of your services, you would have a different yardstick or tools to assess the impact of your support services for our cooperatives, and we also have another yardstick or a tool of measurement to assess your impact on SMEs.
So, the question here is, what systems and instruments are used by FIFA and the Department of Transport, of small business, to assess the impact of the financial services? On SMEs and on cooperatives. Those are the questions that I wanted to ask.
On the table, there's a question that you can raise about the nutrition. Conversation system, just maybe take a look at one and then we just the one you want to go to talk about. Yeah.
Maybe before you respond, let us have the lunch. I've just been made aware with the our lunch outside. And then you can respond, please. Thank you.
I'm told you said 18